Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Because you're talking about what? You're talking about... bitching about that sale you shot, some son of a bitch don't want to buy land, somebody don't want what you're selling, some broad you're trying to screw, so forth. Let's talk about something important. Are they all here?
All but one.
Well, I'm going anyway. Let's talk about something important. Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only. You think I'm f***ing with you? I am not with you. I'm here from downtown. I'm here from Mitch and Murray. And I'm here on a mission of mercy. Your name's Levine.
Yeah.
You call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch? I don't gotta listen to this shit. You certainly don't, pal. Because the good news is you're fired. The bad news is you've got all you've got just 1 week to regain your job, starting with tonight. Starting with tonight's sit. Oh, have I got your attention now? Good. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize, a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. Let me have your attention for a moment. You know what it takes to sell real estate? It takes brass balls to sell real estate. We're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. First prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired.
Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks! Beat it!
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
Brass balls.
Always be closing.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
Brass balls.
Get them to sign on the line which is dotted.
My wife filled in a form.
Get them to sign.
And we have been plagued for the last year.
Get them to sign.
I don't want to buy land. I don't want to invest in land. I have nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Brass ball.
You know what it takes to sell
you
real estate?
Going
all
out.
I need is a lead.
Give me a lead.
What's the point?
Trying to make a living on these deadbeat leaves.
Close or you hit the bricks.
Kiss my ass.
There's the door.
These leaves are shit.
I don't care. Hit the bricks, pal, and beat it.
I can't make a goddamn dollar with these leads. With these leads. I can't make a goddamn dollar with these leads. With these leads.
They're broke. They're deadbeats.
Deadbeats.
Money in the mattress.
Anybody's going out, I could use some coffee.
You are going out. Put that coffee down.
Where did you learn your trade?
Put that coffee down.
You fairy.
We get some coffee?
Coffee.
Coffee's for closers only.
Coffee.
A, B, C.
Always be closing.
Get the chalk. Get the chalk. Put me on the Cadillac board.
I closed them.
I don't think so, Shelly.
Hey.
I think you're going away.
They're nuts. The people are insane.
They just like talking.
Just like talking.
To salesmen.
Hey.
Hit the bricks. Hit the bricks. Hit the bricks.
I like it. Leave.
Hit the bricks.
Hey.
Hit the bricks.
You heard the man.
Brass ball.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
I'm not living on these deadbeats.
Give me a lead.
I'm going out.
You close them.
Close or you hit the bricks.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Go to lunch.
I'm going home.
Third prize.
I gotta go out.
What can you do? Don't have the leads. If you do not have the goddamn leads.
Hit the bricks.
Beat it. Hit the bricks.
A, B, C.
Always be closing.
Thank you.
Hi, hello. It is 31 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. Like if it drawing near that ye might be amused and entertained on this Friday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, from where we can almost, well, we can't. I mean, if the wall wasn't here, and also if there wasn't a window, and if I was like 12 feet that way and on the other side.
And if you didn't keep the curtains closed all the time.
And if the curtains weren't closed, sure. And if I were, in fact, on the other side of the street and then down the road about 100 yards, I could almost see where Bill Oakley works. But not quite. Mm. Almost. Anyway, thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Friday, and welcome to Day 12. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today, as might be your want, or, you know, not, it's 503-505-6964. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Don Taylor if you like. It is don@rickemerson.com. don@rickemerson.com. See, here's the thing. I only have the one email address. Because it's like I just... No. You know, but you... There's actually so much response. It's so large is your fandom. So vast and enormous and growing at every moment is the following for you. That now I believe there are like 17 different email addresses for you, because you probably got one for Ham-Fisted Radio.
I do.
You got one for the Rick Emerson Show that is just don@rickemerson.com. And then what else is there, Don?
Well, in addition to my two personal addresses, one for business and one for just my personal stuff, we also have Show Pony.
That's right.
@rickemerson.com.
Exactly. That is all one word, just like it sounds, Showpony @rickemerson.com. Did I tell you that Seamus registered the Rick Emerson and Showpony.com
yes,
address?
Yes, he mentioned that, yes.
And then he said, I don't know whether he was serious about this or if he was just saying it, if he was attempting to be ironic, and then he said, if there's ever anything we wanted to use it for, as though there's any number of things, like there's a lot of things competing for use of that URL. It seems like there's really only one thing you'd use it for, and maybe not even that. I mean, I don't know that that's, it's not like registering, you know, like Windows 2015 or something, or, you know.
Well, that could be our animated web series.
Yes. Yes, it could be. If you would like to contact us, you can do that there. You can also do it via the text box on the website or at Skype, which is at Rick Emerson Show. That's all one word. Rick Emerson Show via Skype. About what things might you wish to contact us? Honestly, I don't know. Here's the things we're talking about today, though, and then all or some of these may interest you, or, again, you know, none of them. I don't know. I just don't know. Clown Watch coming up today. Corpse Watch coming up today. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life, work, and legacy of Mr. Dennis Miller. Also, our good friend Siegfried Zilliger will be stepping in to talk about the double feature happening tonight at the Hollywood Theater. That is tonight. Sorry, tonight, May 27th, Friday, the zombie double feature at the Hollywood Theater. It is Demons, followed by Night of the Comet, gets underway around 9 o'clock or so. That is at the Hollywood Theater on 40th and Sandy. It's happening tonight, followed by Zombie Game Day, which is tomorrow night at Guardian Games at 303 Southeast 3rd. It's a Zombie Game Day happening tomorrow night at Guardian Games, or actually all day tomorrow. And then the zombie double feature tonight as we wrap up May of the Dead. So you can find out more about that at mayofthedead.com. In addition to all of this, and I know it doesn't seem possible that we could fit anything else in. I mean, right now it just seems like it's just a bag just bursting with comedic goodness in every stripe and flavor. But no. No, no, no. Don Taylor's also tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
President Obama signs an extension of the Patriot Act. TV channels in India have been warned not to broadcast sexy deodorant ads. And a woman is arrested for biting packages of jerky in a dollar store.
Excellent. Also, right at the outset, somebody has asked, and they specify that this is a holdover from Legion of News. It says, please to be asking Don to explain how, quote, hobos make their living, end quote.
Well,
did one of us talk about hobos making their living?
Well, I talked about, I was comparing our...
Jeff Conaway to a hobo?
Our fascination with celebrities who are down on their luck with, and them being paid to be down on their luck on TV for our amusement, with us giving money to hobos to fight each other for bum fights.
Oh, you compared it to being like bum fights.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I think I may have been the one who said hobos making their living.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would imagine hobos make their living just by...
panhandling?
I was trying to come up with something funny, but there really isn't anything there. I mean, once you get past pulling out your teeth with a pair of pliers, the comedy's all exhausted. Really, that's it. You've gone to the mountain already.
I was doing a soft shoe.
Yeah, I don't think that really. I don't think that really is the thing that happens.
There's collecting cans.
I don't think there are hobos anymore. I mean, I don't know how a hobo is different from a bum, or how a bum is different from a transient, or how transients are from a street person. I think to be a hobo, you almost have to have like a polka dotty sort of a bindle, you know.
I just prefer using the term hobo because it's funnier and it seems a little bit less offensive than calling them bums.
Yeah, but I mean, well, let's be honest. I mean, really, if you're a hobo, you have a certain amount of charm to you. And I don't know when the last time you were near the homeless. There's no charm to be had there. No. It's really just scabies and just a serious funk that permeates your clothing. There's nothing. So. All right. Well, this is now. Perhaps it's this. Perhaps that bums sit around and are stationary, whereas hobos are like bums, but they travel.
That's right. They're riding the rails. They're seeking their fortune.
They're hopping a tramp steamer and finding their way west.
Yes.
Like Fievel, but you know, but like with a heroin habit. Yeah. So like 17 people. Hobos ride trains, and sometimes host internet radio shows. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you were far too well-groomed to be a hobo.
Maybe they weren't talking about me.
No, I could pass for a hobo, but...
I figured they were talking about Bobby.
Oh, I thought they were talking about me.
Okay.
I tried to, spit myself up today because we had gentlemen callers, and I realized at some point that really I've got, this level that is just as good as it gets. And it gets no better.
Because we have gentlemen callers. You mean Siegfried?
Yeah. Well, and Jim. And Jim Willig.
That's true.
They're both coming.
Do you normally dress up for Jim?
Maybe not, but I consider it. I think about it. I think,
you toy with it and then just...
Yeah.
You weigh it and then decide against it.
Well, the thing is, I realize that you don't actually, see me, really, anymore. We've been sitting across from each other.
What does that
for,
mean?
I mean, eyeliner, no eyeliner... Hair combed, hair not combed.
You're saying I'm indifferent to your appearance. That's not true.
You don't notice.
That's okay. Well, okay.
It's all the same to you.
You know, I think of the two of us in the room, I think only one of us is allowed to make that statement definitively or to claim absolute knowledge of that fact. It's not that I don't notice. I just don't care.
See, yeah, there you go. And then what?
Two different things altogether. Yeah. I mean, I know. I notice if you come in, you have. I have made this observation before, you damn woman. That you came in the other day, sans makeup, and I noticed. And I didn't make any observation about it because then it sounds like I'm just finding fault with your appearance. You know, so I didn't want to be like, well, you're not wearing any makeup today, because then it implies that like you need it, and it's like you can't leave the house without it, or you're just like a mud fence or something if you're not covered up, which isn't true. You know, and I notice.
Thank you.
And occasionally, you come in wearing extra eyeliner, and then I will ask you why. Like, if I notice that you have extra makeup on sometimes, I will query you. And I've done that on the show, of course, about why you're wearing extra eyeliner. I always figure it's that you're going to be talking to somebody ham-fisted radio. And so that you're going to, some guy going to be in the studio with you or whatever doing the show. And then so you're getting gussied up for him.
No, I think it's almost always just because the more elaborate my drag, the more I can fool myself into thinking that I'm prettier than I am.
Okay. As long as you've got a positive outlook about it. So it's for Jim. Well, that'll be an ego boost for Jim, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, you want to put your best aesthetic foot forward if he's going to be in the studio today.
Yeah, and then Siegfried's in here too, and Siegfried is around actresses and such. So I feel like there's a sort of minimum level of grooming that's expected.
You know, for Siegfried, really, what you want to do is wrap yourself in plastic sheeting, maybe put yourself in a trunk. I'm just saying. Maybe learn to hold your breath for a long, long time. Yeah. That's just a guess. I don't know. I could be way off.
There may be things about Siegfried I'm better off not knowing.
No, Siegfried is an odd individual. I'll put it that way. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just Siegfried is I would say of all of the people that we know, of all of the people that are sort of in our circle of friends / acquaintances / coworkers / colleague whatever, and I think if you were to get all of the people we know in a room. And to put this question to them either collectively or individually and ask them who is just the flat out oddest of all of us, I think that guy would win in a walk. And I don't mean that he's.
And we know a guy named Todd the Corpse.
Seriously. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying it's like he's just a big bundle of facets and contradictions and, you know. And then can I just tell you this? I don't know if you probably haven't ever been to Siegfried's place. We were talking about Tim Riley's place yesterday and how Tim lives in this magnificently appointed home where just everything is, you know, it's not huge, but everything is just absolutely perfect. And every bit of design, every bit of decoration, every piece of furniture I mean, everything down to, like, you know, his choice of spatula. Like, it's all just exactly what should be there. Siegfried's Place is exactly the same way. You walk in and you just... And clearly it wasn't... Like, it's not a thing that he had done for him. Obviously, it is a thing that he, that he has designed himself. But it just makes me feel, you know, that is the thing where I realize that I just don't have that skill. Look at the studio where we work now. I mean, we're just, you know... Yeah. I mean, this is effectively what my bedroom looked like when I was a kid. You know, it's just the walls are covered in black, and then there's just, you know, and then there's like a bunch of, and then, you know, and then there's just a bunch of like, things that came from like the knickknack section of like a Sam Goody music store.
I posted a picture to Facebook a few days ago from, you know, just sitting at my desk, and I looked over and I went, here's the corner of the window by my desk, and it was like, you know, a squeaky salmon, yeah. and a William H. Macy, action figure, and you know, it's like, so yeah, it's,
I mean, that's kind of my thing at home, where it's like I'm just sitting there and I've got, you know, and they've just got a whole bunch of skulls, and then like, and then a JFK bust, which is outfitted with a Michael Jackson mask. I mean, that's what passes for you know, like interior design in my home. Whereas like you go to Siegfried's Place and it's like, I don't know, it's like the first time I was ever there, it's like he was like, his brother was there, and they were polishing like the espresso machine or something that's in the kitchen, and I'm not making that up. There is like one of those full-on like things that they have at espresso, yeah. Sitting there, and it's like gleaming and it's huge and it's like the size of a Chrysler, and it's like his brother was very carefully polishing it, and then Siegfried was talking about, I don't know, he had to like go out to the film room for a second, which is like some climate controlled place in his house where he keeps 35 millimeter films in canisters, and then because he was working on this TV pilot that I did, it didn't really ever come to anything, but we were working on this pilot, or I was watching him work on it, and then we left his home and we walked out through the garden to his editing room, which is just this like great place that is lined with cedar wood, you know. And then it's like I go back home, and it's like everything just reeks of like, you know, like frozen fish sticks that I've just put into the oven, you know, while I'm just sitting there trying to figure out which pair of hole covered boxers I will wear to work the next day. So that really is the difference between me and, you know, yeah, like almost anybody, I would imagine. Do we already do headlines?
Yes.
All right. Excellent.
Yes, we did.
All right. So that is all coming up. So Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Siegfried will be here to talk about the zombie double feature happening tonight at the Hollywood Theater. You can find out more about that at mayofthedead.com. That is mayofthedead.com. The double feature starts around 9 p.m. It's going to be Demons, followed by Night of the Comet. Again, that's at the Hollywood Theater tonight. And then tomorrow, Zombie Game Day happening at Guardian Games, which is down at 303 Southeast 3rd, not too far from actually where we are right now, and so forth. How was your evening, Dawn?
It was fine. It was good. It was okay.
Let's just get right to it. Am I going to be helping you move this weekend?
No, I did not actually get the apartment. Apparently, they liked someone better. There were a couple of other people that were looking at it, so I'm assuming either...
Did they like someone better, or did they just dislike you more than they dislike the others?
It could have been that, too.
All right.
Yeah. You know, either I'm sure it's one of those things that somebody else had, like, better credit than me, or they didn't have pets, or there was something that swayed them to decide. And so I'm staying put for a while, which is, you know, a little disappointing on some level, but on the other hand, I'm not going to spend the next 3 days packing crap into boxes and moving, so.
Do they call you, or do they leave a message, or do they email you?
No, they called. Well, Patrick talked to them, because you were privy to that conversation of, like, have them call you! I'm on the radio during the day, I'm busy! You know, like, because I'm a horrible, horrible shrew of a person. So, that happened. So it's kind of a little bit of...
It's a mixed blessing.
It's a mixed blessing.
Is what it is.
It is.
All right. Excellent.
And, yeah.
And that was that.
And that was that.
All right, wonderful.
Yes.
Let's see. Before we do anything else, we'll get to some news here in just a skosh. We want to wish a happy birthday to our friend Scott Daly, who turns... Anyone?
Was this 41, 42?
I believe it is 41.
He just turned 40, like, I guess last year, because it was a big deal.
I believe it is 41 that he turns today. So happy birthday to Scott Daly from all of us. Let's see, what else? Oh, and then I'd like to thank the numerous people who sent this to me. So let's see. I think the first person who actually sent this was somebody who also posted it to my to the Facebook page. This is from our friend Jeff Futzer. And I actually reposted that. I think I said this out on Twitter this morning, and I put it up on Facebook as well. I reposted this along with several observations about it. He posted the link to the... And I should have seen that this was an inevitability. This is like when they launched... This is like when Motley Crue did that thing. Because there was the Rock the Boat Cruise or whatever that they were having a couple years ago, where it was like Poison or like... it was like Poison or the Bullet Boys or something. One of those bands. I think it was Poison. I think it was like Poison and like Winger and perhaps Trickster were doing a Rock the Boat cruise, and they did the Rock the Boat 2. That was, of course, followed by probably the best named of all of them, the Motley Cruise, which was just where it was like you and the guys from Motley Crue, I don't know, just like tooling around in the ocean, with big sausage casing Vince Neil, while you, I don't know, played shuffleboard or something. Well, you played shuffleboard and waited for the sun to turn Mick Mars into dust. So the Motley Crue's have it, but that has all been overshadowed by the unveiling of the launch date for the first Kiss Cruise, with a K, of course, which is going to be happening in October of this year. It's the Kiss Cruise, Wet, Wild, and Rockin'.
Oh, God.
Setting sail October 13th to 17th, 2011, from Miami, Florida, to a Half Moon. It says Half Moon K, and I don't know what that means. I don't know if they mean Half Moon Bay, but this is like their official webpage. I can't imagine they would just let that. It's part of the logo. I can't imagine they would just let. I don't know where Half Moon K is, unless that's the Caymans.
And it's pronounced Key.
K-A-C-A-Y?
Oh, C-A-Y?
I know how to pronounce key.
I thought, okay.
Why?
Well, there's a thing.
Half Moon K, C-A-Y.
Okay, I thought it was the Q-U-A-Y thing.
No. So I don't know if that's part of the Caymans or if that's, I have no idea what that means. You can see this, by the way, if you really do want to. Kiss fan or no, you really do want to see this. You can see this at Kiss Cruise. At the Kiss Cruise.
Half Moon K is in the Bahamas.
Yeah, so that makes sense because it says Miami to Half Moon K and Nassau, Bahamas. So it is a 4-day cruise. Let me ask you this, Don. What would you imagine that the per person, the lowest price ticket goes for on the Kiss Cruise? Like, if just, and again, this is one person, because they have tiers, okay, where, and this all depends, this has to do with the size of your room, mm-hmm, where the room is, if you have an ocean view from your room. What would you imagine the very, very lowest price ticket goes for one person for the Kiss Cruise?
How many days is the cruise?
Well, it's from the 13th to the 17th, so, you know, you figure with three and a half days.
It doesn't include airfare, I'm assuming. It's just
No. This is just your ticket onto the boat.
Lowest price, I'd say about $14.50.
You're highballing it.
There. Oh, am I? Okay.
The lowest is actually you can get a ticket for a mere $800.
Oh, well, that's actually for a cruise. That's actually not too terrible.
They do top out at $2,700.
Yeah.
And then this is the best part, by the way. There's the whole what is included in my ticket price. So on the Kiss Cruise, the price of your room includes 4-night cruise with 2 beautiful island stops, the indoor Kiss rock show, a Kiss acoustic sail away show, which apparently happens on the at the actual launch. You get a photo with Kiss. A Kiss. See, the thing is, here's the thing.
That is an old photograph of them, by the way.
Well, how would you know? I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the brilliance of Kiss. How would you?
You can still tell by the smoothness of the skin.
See, I think the genius of Kiss is that they have effectively, I think without even really realizing it, they have just inured themselves. They have immunized themselves from the withering hand of time. You're never going to see one of those guys looking like an Edward Gorey picture, which is what Mick Mars looks like. Here's the thing about Kiss, the genius of them, is that their Jedi mind trick actually works via text over the internet. Because the longer I read this and the more things I list off from the what is included in my room, the price of my ticket, like the better deal it seems like. So a Kiss Q&A on the Lido deck. And then it actually says, this, by the way, is where you can tell that fans have gotten screwed a little bit over the years. With a Kiss Q&A, it actually says, yes, all of them, Paul, Gene, Tommy, and Eric, the legendary Kiss Halloween party, performances by other bands. And then, this is the most emblematic phrase of the entire thing. When they're listing off the various things that you get for your $800 at the low end, access to exclusive Kiss Cruise merchandise.
Oh.
You don't actually get any of the merchandise.
Yeah, you have the
opportunity to buy some.
The option to buy stuff.
You have the option to buy more things.
Yes.
From Gene Simmons. And your meals, by the way, are also included, apparently.
Well, of course. It's a cruise. I want to read two short paragraphs here from the copy on this website, though, for KissCruise.com. On this outrageous ship, you'll get to party with fist-pounding hard rock all night and live like a rock star all day. You'll see two legendary shows with Kiss, along with more electric performances by other artists. The music doesn't stop there. We'll have crazy, with a K, onboard activities, rockin' theme nights, major Halloween party, badass costume contests, and more. Crank it up a few notches on the Carnival Destiny. It's the perfect place to kick back and rock out. Live large in any of the bars and nightclubs. be a high roller in the casino, and treat yourself to the rock star lifestyle with fine dining buffets and 24-hour room service. Bring your groupies and hang out by the resort-style pool before a night of partying. We love it loud.
Yeah, almost none of that is true. There's almost nothing there that is accurate. Here's another one. I'm reading some event details here. Shout It Out Loud. The Kiss Cruise, Wet Wild and Rockin', is setting sail October 13th to 17th. Are you ready, Dawn, for the wettest, wildest, most rockin' cruise in the Atlantic?
Am I?
Because we want you, the most dedicated, brave, and awesomely loyal fans, to join us for this huge adventure. Invade the high seas with the first ever Kiss Cruise. And then they've got the itinerary. So you depart Miami, and then and then you come back to Miami. And then I'm looking at the message boards here, and the first comment is from somebody, and it's just a picture of a poodle, by the way, as their Facebook picture, and it just says, "I want to go." Period. And then below that, "This is going to be awesome. My birthday is the following week. This will be the best week of my life."
Yeah, somebody further down in the comments says, "I've been on all 5 Skinnerd cruises."
Yeah.
"Had a fantastic time on all of them."
That's wonderful.
What do you suppose a Skinnerd cruise consists of?
I have no idea.
I mean, what... don't get me wrong. I am second to no man in my love of Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I mean that sincerely. What do you suppose happens on a Lynyrd Skynyrd cruise? Is it just a lot of the ship just driving into things? Just a lot of Cameron Crowe just running up and down the aisles and asking if you have any last thoughts?
This is actually quite a bargain compared to the Jonathan Coulton cruise. Because I've never been interested...
There's a Jonathan Coulton cruise?
Yes, 2 years in a row.
Is it on a hovercraft?
2 years in a row they've had a Coulton cruise like this. The last one, it was Coulton, Paul and Storm, John Hodgman was there, Will Wheaton. They were all on the cruise. And it was like $1,500. But it was like a week at sea or something. I think it went to Mexico or wherever. But I remember thinking, that sounds awesome. It's like, it's $1,500.
What happens on that cruise? I mean, that's the thing about this. It's like, this is not like a new idea. Talk show hosts have been doing this for years and years and years. This is a radio talk show host of a certain era and a certain genre rolled out years ago. I mean, I'm talking like 20, 30 years ago. They were doing, like, Bruce Williams is a guy who did that. If anybody out there knows Ken and Daria Dolan, who are sort of old school talk show hosts from Chicago, they used to do this.
And they're already booking for the Joko Cruise Crazy 2012 to the Bahamas.
Would you imagine it's just, I mean, is it just an excuse to do a lot of, like, pirate humor and to wear wear a sash and some sort of, like, your cutlass around?
Yeah, and to just
stride around midships.
To be on a cruise and to be just sort of insanely geeky. You know.
By the way, I'm looking here again at the message board on the Kiss Cruise site. This guy says, "Me and my rock chick will be there. Look out, high seas. I'm a-coming." Followed by this guy. Followed by this guy saying, "If it weren't for my crummy minimum wage job, I wouldn't have to save for 6 months for this.
Oh.
But what kind of true fan wouldn't pay? I'm all in." You know, that just warms the cockles of Gene's heart. That Gene reads something like that, and he just says, that's when he realizes...
"Well, you are my people."
That this is the land of opportunity. That everything his mother told him when they were coming here from Israel was true. When she said, "Gene, in America, you will be able to swindle fools out of thousands of dollars every second." And he said, "Mother, can it possibly be true?" It is true, Gene. It is true. And I say this as a huge Kiss fan. God bless him. All right. So there you go. Somebody says, "What is it going to take to get?" Somebody's asking if there's going to be an Emerson show cruise. Probably not anytime really. It would just be a cruise, It would just be a cruise to like Lentz.
It would just be that paddle wheel steamer, and it would just go down the river a little bit, and then just turn around and come back.
Somebody says that Skinner cruise is where you're just shooting at things and shouting racist phrases. I shouldn't laugh at that. I shouldn't participate in stereotyping of Southern culture, but that's funny.
Well, you don't really think of Skynyrd fans as being people who would go on cruises.
I don't really think of them as being in the sun much at all, unless they're gator chasing.
No.
I mean, that's unless you're just on one of those weird, like skinny, like cigarette boats that has a huge fan on the back and like going through the Okefenokee. I mean,
well,
I can't.
Here it was, the Simple Man Cruise. was...
Is it really called that?
They described, yes, the ultimate Southern rockin' rebel party on the open seas.
Oh, God.
Sailing from Tampa to Grand Cayman January 20th, 24th, the ship will be the perfect setting for rocking out on the Lido deck, relaxing in the hot tub, trying your luck at the casino, and checking out the awesome music.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
and then there's pictures of people throwing devil horns and wearing the trucker caps on a cruise ship.
This is why there's got to be some sort of a... There needs to be some key man clause in these bands when they form, so that when Ronnie Van Zant dies, that everybody else who happens to share the same last name as him can't just flog his virtual corpse for the next 40 years.
Well, I guess apparently there is a company, much like Creation Con, like... they put on all these conventions around the country that they're not really like true fan conventions. They are.
What is Creation Con?
Creation Con is an event where you have like say a Buffy Con or an X-Files Con or a Highlander Con, and basically this company Creation Con puts on the convention,
right?
And then they arrange for all of the exorbitant ticket sales, and they charge people ridiculous amounts of money for everything from getting a picture with somebody to getting an autograph with somebody to going to some kind of a special breakfast or something. And they're not really fan conventions so much as they're just money-making opportunities for this Creation Con.
Well, I always figured that there was a company that did that. I mean, yeah. I can't imagine that...
This company, Sixth Man, is the company that puts on these rock and roll cruises. They did the Skinner cruise, and they're doing the Kiss cruise.
That doesn't surprise me. I can't imagine that a lot of Buffy fans really are going to, they didn't really strike me as the type that are going to, that are really going to have the, they didn't really strike me as the type they're going to have the patience to sort of sit there and do the, and handle the sort of spreadsheet aspect of it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just that, it just seems like this is, like the minutiae involved in that would just be mind crushing. I mean, I can't. The logistics of putting on a convention that size must be immense. I mean, I would be stunned if there wasn't a company that did it.
Coming up, they also, you can find them actually at sixthman.net. Coming up, they also have the TCM Classic Cruise.
Is that the Turner Classic Movies Cruise?
Yes. Yeah. An Elvis Cruise, the Rock Boat, and the VH1 Best Cruise Ever.
Now, see, the Rock Boat...
And a Kid Rock cruise.
Is the Rock Boat, is that the thing I was thinking of that the Kiss launched a couple... Or that Poison did a couple years ago? Or is that something... Or is Rock Boat just like some sad generic, where it's like you and some of the guys from the Collins Rossington band?
There's a bunch of... let's see. It was the Alternate Roots, Tim Brantley, Carbon Leaf, Freddie Jones Band.
This is the no one I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Cruise.
Stephen Kellogg and the Sixers, as well as your hosts, Sister Hazel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clearly, they're just.
That was.
That's a top tier cruise, is what that is.
The Rock Boat.
Okay. All right.
And I'm trying to figure out what the VH1 Best Cruise Ever.
Please tell me I get to spend time with like House Sparks.
Well, it was April 28th through May 2nd, so you just missed it.
Mm-hmm.
You would experience nonstop rock from VH1 faves Train, Lifehouse, Colby Kayat, or Kaye, whatever name is pronounced, and then a bunch of other bands that you've never heard
Imagine
of.
Imagine being stuck on a ship with Train. Imagine being stuck on a ship with Lifehouse and just having nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Not being able to get away. I mean, really having to choose between hearing that goddamn Drops of Jupiter song again and just hurling yourself into an angry, unforgiving sea.
And then there was the Kid Rock Chillin' the Most cruise.
Yes,
that went from New Orleans to Cozumel.
All right. Well, here's the thing, is that Lara's always telling me we got to take a real vacation. I mean, and she is saying that, and I asked her what a real vacation meant, and she said, well, it's got to be somewhere outside,
Kiss Cruise.
It's got to be somewhere outside the continental U.S.
Kiss Cruise.
And we were talking about taking this vacation in November. The Kiss Cruise is in October. I mean, close enough. I mean, really, honestly.
It's really everything. You got the Kiss for her, you've got the Bahamas, yeah.
It seems like many things are included. Your meals are already included,
yes.
So it's like bare minimum is already paid for once you get your ticket.
And the food on cruise ships is magnificent.
Is it really?
Yes.
So it's not, this isn't, as somebody was suggesting that the Emerson cruise, of course, it would just be like spray cheese and granola. I don't know. I have never been on a cruise ship. I know she has, my wife's done that a few times. I never have. So I have no idea what that's actually like.
Yeah, no, the food is amazing and plentiful.
I wonder if I could somehow sucker her into doing this. I wonder if there's any way.
I bet you could.
I wonder if there's any way that I could convince her to actually to buy that as like the actual vacation that we're going to take. I don't even want to get my hopes up because that just seems impossible. It seems like that's too good to possibly work. Because, like, she had something about wanting to go to, like, you know, I don't know. She wanted to go to, like, Mazatlan or something. Or just, you know, she wanted to go to, like, San Miguel.
Well, and, you have to go on the Kiss Cruise and also at the same time take a whole bunch of pictures. Maybe do a couple of interviews. See if you can actually get an interview with, like, Gene or whoever. Bring it back. We run the interviews. Then you can write it off as a business expense.
That's a great idea. That's a fantastic idea. All right. No, I like what we're saying. That's wonderful. And I mean, and the thing is, it's months away. So I would have time to see if I could work some sort of a connection, work some sort of an angle for it.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. I could be blogging about it. It could be show content. There you go. That's a thing I could write that thing off in its entirety and just see if the man would let me do it. Writing things off is not as easy as one might think. That's a thing I started doing that a few years ago, and it really is tricky what they'll let you write off and what they won't. But that's the thing. If I just start laying the groundwork for that now, man, that could be a massive deduction in the works for me.
Yeah.
Awesome. There you go. So the thing is, it's not only entertaining, it's shrewd business. It makes finance. Yes. I can't afford not to go, really, is the thing.
And you're creating content for the show?
Yes, I am. Okay, no, you're right. This is a relatively old picture of them. I mean,
yes,
you know,
it is.
I mean, you know, all things being equal. All right, excellent. Well, thank you, Jeff Futzer. I appreciate you may have solved like 15 different problems for me at once. That's excellent. Is there another Skinner cruise happening by chance?
They don't seem to have one planned yet.
That's hard to believe.
Sure,
it wasn't a roaring
there
success.
There have been like three or four already, so I'm sure they'll do it again.
Here's the thing: I got to book something like this because if I don't. Like, if we don't do this, then it's like, I know I'm going to get roped into going like on a They Might Be Giants cruise or something.
Or you'll just have to go backpack through some third world country.
That's the other thing. It's like, I don't want to have to. That's this. Like, this is. It seems like this is almost just like going to a hotel for 4 days, which is really, that's kind of my goal. Because otherwise, I'm going to have to go to some place where it's like, I don't know, there's like a beach, you know, and like native peoples that I have to talk to.
The ships have like, you know, they all have Wi-Fi in the rooms. They got like movie theaters and five different restaurants. And
think of all the Love Boat references I could make.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it seems like at this point it's a no-brainer. This, by the way, again.
And Kiss.
That's what I was going to say. Just behold, A, the malleable state of my brain, and also just the transformative magic that resides within Gene Simmons and Kiss. Because I started off literally, like, not even like 9 minutes ago making fun of this, and now I'm basically just committed to doing it, and it's a question of whether or not I get divorced to do it, or, you know, or whether she'll go along with me. I don't even know how that happened. You know that there's got to be some sort of like Star Wars version of this in the works at some point. There's got to be some sort of a 5-day cruise to explore new islands and new forms of Mai Tai. There's got to be some sort of like Star Trek sci-fi. I'm surprised they haven't done like a Buffy one, something like this.
They have. I mean, they do have. There are all kinds of cruises for all kinds of things that have that have people from different TV shows and geek. I know that Will Wheaton has been on a couple of Star Trek cruises where they get some of the Star Trek actors on the show, and then they show episodes and they do meet and greets, and they just hang out on the ship like all weekend with people and stuff. So
it really is, if you can just, here's the thing, if you can just create yourself just a nice little franchise, that is a thing you can flog in infinite ways until you are dead. You can just milk that cow, I mean, just for 50, 60, 70 years.
Well, the thing is, if we had enough listeners that we thought would actually pay for it, you know, we could do any of these things at all. I mean, what you basically do is you talk to a travel agent and you say, yeah, I want to plan this. And they essentially reserve the whole thing for you as a block. And then, you know, then you start selling the reservations and start selling the tickets. I mean, you know, you can do that with a block of hotel rooms at a hotel. You can do that on a cruise ship. You can do that all sorts of places. I mean, if we had something that if we actually thought people would pay, we could do, and we could fill up a ship, we could do this too.
By the way, Cheryl has asked me to clarify my complaint about, quote, native peoples I would have to talk to. Well, I'm just saying, you know, if
you know, little brown people.
I'm just saying, if I go to a place where English is not the primary language, then it's like all my rarefied wit is wasted.
Yeah.
All my dry and wry witticisms, they're just being spread out on the before them, like so much sand on the beach that it's just blown away.
Yeah. You just end up saying things all day like, "What is this food?" And no, I don't want to buy a basket.
Exactly. And it's like none of my small wonder references are going to work. It's like I'll be a man with man with no talent or ability to charm anybody. So, I mean, that's the thing. And plus, I know me. I'll just be that guy who's just shouting at people. I'll be looking at my Alta Vista phrase book or whatever, and then screaming at them about how I want more horchata. Except I'll really be asking for... I won't be saying that, though. I'll try to ask for horchata, but I'll really be asking for them to stick a trowel in my ear or something that is, you know, something that I don't really want. So, all right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Somebody's asking, is there a real Love Boat? I'm surprised they haven't done that. Where it's like you and Gavin McLeod and that guy who played Gopher. I mean, or whoever's still alive.
I'll bet they did. I'll bet back in like
Julie,
your
cruise director.
They
could be doing that now, though. You know, because I don't know that she would actually pay it, but everybody my wife's age would totally pay that. Like if they had some sort of, they should. Oh my God, there should totally be, if there isn't already, like some sort of TV Land cruise that Nick at Night does, where it's like you and some of the chicks from Facts of Life, and then you know, and then it's like, and then like you get one of the down on their luck Bradys. And then it's like you know, and then like one of the Charles in Charge sisters, bam, on a boat, $500. I'm in. I mean, there's got to be a jillion people.
If Dick Van Dyke was there, I would totally do it.
Yeah, or like Dick Van Dyke, sure. Tom Bosley, I guess, is dead, but well, you know what? Andy Griffith still alive. I'm just saying, you could totally do like a golden age of television or a 70s television cruise. Here's the other thing, and we'll talk more about this with Big Jim. There ought to be some sort of a porn cruise. Where they just get on international waters and laws don't apply, and then you can just hump a porn star to your heart's delight. You know what I mean? And that's part of your ticket price. You pay the ticket, and then it's. Or how about this? You know, it's like when you sometimes you stay at a resort or you go to a hotel or whatever, and it's like it's part of it. They give you like a little punch card, and it's good for like two continental breakfasts and like a massage. You would get that, except it would be good for like, you know, you get like two around the world and like a Hummer. You know, and it's like however you want to spend it, it's like a preloaded Starbucks card.
Right.
But it's not so much that as it's for banging like hookers, or porn stars or whatever. And it's like, and you can use it in whatever denominations you know. And it's like you go out there and she runs it through the thing, and you know, and like, and then you could add more credit to it later if you wanted to or something. But if you're like, you know, you're 12 and a half miles out, you know, your prostitution not a problem, and then you're good. I mean, there's a huge market for that probably.
Probably.
You can just go out on the high seas and just. Bang Penny Flame for 3 days or whatever, and then you come back home, bam. And then with a collection of little snow globy things as well. So I'm just saying, there's something there.
All right. Well, let's see.
What are all these snow globes you have here? I pick those up on my porn cruises.
Yeah, I mean, I do that
every spring.
Okay, here's another final one. Here's another thing they could do. You know what they ought to? They could totally do an X-Files cruise. They could do, and it's like you know, and then it goes through the Bermuda Triangle. There you go.
Yeah.
Can you survive? You know, woo! And then it's like you go through the thing, and then it really is just, you know, and then on the other side, there's just a guy selling you, like, necklaces or whatever, because that's all those places really are. It's like you land somewhere, and a guy sells you a grass skirt for, like, $70. You probably can't get Duchovny at this point. I imagine you could get Gillian Anderson. What's she doing? Nothing. You could get Gillian Anderson, a couple of the Lone Gunmen, and then, bam, you're set, you know? And maybe the T-1000 guy, and then you're good to go. I mean, you kind of, there's a bunch of people who would pay, like Aaron Duran would pay $850 for that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Really, final idea here. There should be something just called Comma Cruise, or Comma. There should be like a floating comic book convention on these. We could lose these. This is a cottage industry. You know, Gene has really shown me the way here. We got to get on this. All right. Let's see. What are we doing? It's already 2:10. We should take a break. Take a break. Come back after this. Big Jim Willig is going to be in the studio. We'll have another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 coming up later on today, talking about the life and work of Mr. Dennis Miller. Later on, Siegfried Zielinger is going to be here. We'll talk about tonight's zombie double feature happening at the Hollywood Theater. That is Demons and Night of the Comet happening tonight around 9 p.m. Find out more at mayofthedead.com. And then tomorrow at the Guardian Games Zombie Game Day all day long as we wrap up May of the Dead. Again, that's all at mayofthedead.com. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay there. We will continue after this. Go nowhere. Return next.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
hello love, hello fear, hello loneliness, join us out here, hello funeral and ice cold beer, hello new day, hello baby teeth, hello gray hair, we try to grow grass, now there's weeds everywhere, hello whale, hello bomb, hello just and unfair, hello new day, well I'll be lucky, say. Every time I give away a dollar or two, I find three more on the way. Now for better or worse, the whole universe is singing along with every song I play. Hello, new day. Hello, new day. Hello, raindrop. Hello, sea. Hello, jungle. Hello, Jay. Hello, execution. Hello, CIA. Hello, solution. It's our turn to play. Hello, new day. Well, I feel lucky. I feel cool. What can I say? Every time I give away a dollar or two, I find three more on the way. Now, for better or worse, the whole universe is hello curse, hello cradle, hello hearse, good to be in a stranger universe, hello new day, 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 hello new day.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Thank you.
the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Now, see, now you said the thing about little brown people. Why do I get hit with the ignorant radio host tag over that?
I don't know.
God. Getting your racism all over me. All right.
I got my racism in your peanut butter.
Yes. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's Friday. It is Friday. Oh, I'm sorry. Not, it's ignorant radio hosts. So it's actually you and I. That's so much better. It is a Friday, May 27th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Still to come, we've got, let's see, a clown watch on the way, corpse watch. Also, in just a moment, we'll welcome Mr. Big Jim Willig to the studio. Our good friend Siegfried Zieliger going to be stopping by later on to talk about tonight's zombie double feature happening at the Hollywood Theater. It's Demons and Night of the Comet. And so you can find out more about that by going to mayofthedead.com. By the way, during the break, you know what I came up with? Everybody is Legion of Crews. There you go. Bam. And then you put the rest of it together, though. We do Legion of Crews, but that's just where, like, you stand out on the deck and probably, you know, and probably grow weary of the cold and sea spray after a while. But then, for the low, low cost of, you know, $94, you get to come inside and be bathed in the warm glow of, you know, us and also warmth.
Although I have to thank our listener, Roger, for that idea.
Well done, Roger. Yeah. Excellent. Yes. I like the cut of your jib, sir. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Does anything... I know this sounds like such a dorky, stupid, typical radio guy thing to ask on Friday, but is anything decent open this weekend? Is something I'm supposed to be seeing this weekend? Why do I think that there's something notable? Hangover 2 opens today, which about which I've heard really mixed reviews. I think Eric said it was sort of eh. Eric D. Snyder said he was, you know, he gave it sort of a meh. But I've actually read
one of my film critic pals posted on a Facebook today. He said people keep saying that it's exactly like the first one, but that's not true. The first one was funny.
Yeah, see, but it doesn't, like, you look at that group of guys though, and it's hard to imagine that they could come up with a film that's not funny.
No,
I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible. People funny people do bad films all the time, but. You know, it's not like that's just a bunch of guys from an open mic night.
You know, it looks like it looks like it's probably quite likely amusing, but it's like I can't imagine that it looks like they're basically rerunning the same plot that they did the first time.
Apparently there are some references in the film to that exactly. Who's the guy? Is it Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
Is that the guy who was from Alias? The good-looking guy. Apparently at one point, you know, these are not spoilers. I mean, really, if you consider these spoilers, that is your own deal. But I guess that, you know, it's the whole thing if they wake up the next day and, oh my God, what happened? And I guess he does make some reference to, he says some joke, something to the effect of, like, you know, you all know the drill, and then they start going through their pockets looking for clues for, so I guess they acknowledge that, but, yeah, in any event.
Oh, and Kung Fu Panda 2 opens today.
That's not what I was thinking.
Which I saw and was not all that impressed with.
So. Yeah, I don't think I'll be seeing it. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Let's welcome now to the warm bosom of our studio, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, that's me. Microphone not on. It's like the second week in a row. Hello, how are you?
I'm well. How about you guys?
I am dandy. Is it still... Again, I'm going to be this guy, but is it still raining outside?
It is. It is very much miserable and wet and moist.
I actually had to run an errand this morning, and it's like I had to drive out to like, you know, like the sunny side. And as I was driving, it was that rain where for just a moment you can visualize yourself dying as a result of not being able to see the road, or
absolutely,
of your wheels suddenly leaving the surface of the asphalt.
Have you ever hydroplaned?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, as have I. The first car I ever had, I totaled an epic fashion. It involved me destroying, not really destroying, but scarring up a guardrail that I was charged by the state of Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah, and my only response was like, okay, I will pay like the $150 or whatever that you're going to charge me for this guardrail, but
I'm gonna take it home.
Do I get to keep it? Because I kicked this guardrail's ass. I should get to keep it. They're like, oh, no. We're going to take it back and we're going to... And do what? Put it on a farm with a bunch of other like destroyed state property that, you know, gets abandoned after it's been destroyed? No. If I'm paying for it, I should get to keep it.
I've only been in one accident as an adult, which was, to be fair, that was my fault. But when I was young, I mean, really, when I think of it, I often say, well, I'm a really good driver. I've had the one accident, but, you know, that not we say. But, you know, when I was a teenager, I was a terrible driver, now that I think of it. I mean, I should be dead. Like, at one point, I was driving, my dad had a Jeep Renegade, yeah. And I actually rolled that over at one point into a ditch, because I was just driving along at, like, 80 miles an hour, and
you're a Renegade.
Of course, you know, because I was out living under the gun.
Lorenzo Lamas
on the
lifestyle.
Run. Exactly. I was setting the world on fire.
On a steel Jeep you ride.
Yes. I had a bad reputation in a sticky situation, Don.
Wow.
But I was driving along, and it was, you know, and of course, there's, you know, you have the windshield, but there's no doors. A roof or whatever, and which in retrospect, you know, that's like I'm such a not a guy of the outdoors that indicates exactly. I think I was going to like pick up some girl because I was under the mistaken impression that I was going to like, you know, get some action or whatever I thought that meant, and there was no action to be had. But what there was a huge cloud of dust that I drove through as I was going around a corner at like 80 miles an hour in a Jeep that said in huge letters on the speedometer, do not exceed speeds of 50 miles an hour. Not even 55, like not even the speed limit. It was like, don't approach the speed limit or you will die. And I was going 80 miles an hour, I think probably listening to Boston, and just, you know, and just thinking, you know, like, this is going to be the best night ever. And then the next thing you know, I'm like, ba-boom, 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 down the road. And that was, and I don't even know how I didn't die. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's only because I think I've always been like real anal about the seatbelt thing. So there was that, and I think... It was right around the same time that I was driving along and I had a blowout in my electric blue Maverick and
stop bragging.
There was this sound that had been you know coming from the car for a long time, and I just assumed that it was part of the car's charm or character. You know, sort of like a house makes a lot of creaking noises at night when it settles, sort of a. And you go, well, what's that? And you go, well, that's just part of it. It's an antebellum home. These are the things that, you know, these are part of the, it's just a country noise.
And Mavericks tend to weep openly. That's that's the one thing about the car that most people find adorable.
So I was just driving along in this 1974 electric blue Ford Maverick, which is just, you know, as hideous as it sounds. And by the way, when I bought the car, we found out at one point, you know, it's like they use that, what is it, the putty or whatever, when they fill in a hole in the car, mm-hmm. And then they paint over it. I know what it's called, but it's called like repair putty. And you just, you know, if there's
Bondo.
But this guy, the guy who had sold me the car, he didn't want to go with the extra, you know, he wouldn't have paid like the $12 or whatever to buy a tube of actual putty. So he used, I swear to God, we found it later, the guy who eventually bought the car from us, because I think he was just going to like sell it for scrap or whatever, revealed to us that it was in fact just chewing gum. It was in fact that the guy had just taken like bubble gum and just stuck it on the thing and then just spray painted over it. Because he was...
So you like take it off and like taste like, yep, that's bubble gum.
Yeah.
I've had that before.
Raspberry.
Selling the car to a 16-year-old, which means that like, you know, the car could have been on fire when I bought it. Like it didn't even matter. But I'm driving along and
I don't care about your future. have a great day.
So I'm driving along, and again, an idiot. Because I'm on my way to pick up a different girl with whom I also like never scored. But it's, you know, but I hear this like sound, which is like you. If you hear that now, you would immediately just go like, okay, I'm stopping. I'm stopping wherever I am. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I'm being pursued by a horde of bees. I'm stopping the car, and I'm going to see what that is. And of course, me, you know, no, it's like, you know, there's like, you know, it's driving along and seeing only the carrot, never the stick. And it turns out that what the sound had been is that like 6 months earlier, I had been driving dangerously, of course, during the winter. And I've been trying to impress, wait for it, a girl.
No.
Who thought I was, wait for it, retarded, and who, wait for it, never had sex with me.
I admire the fact, though, that you kept trying.
Well, that's the moral of, that is the leitmotif of my life.
Many men would have just given up, like, long before this.
I am
that
a big believer.
That ant's going to lift that rubber tree plant. I swear to
exactly,
God.
Exactly. That is, I am a big believer in the, it is not that I fell, Don, it's that I stood up one time more than I fell. But But yeah, at one point I was trying to impress a girl by, like, you know, watch me lose control of my motor vehicle during the winter. And I slid through an intersection, somehow thinking that then I could stop the slide at a moment of my choosing, which didn't really happen. And I slid
I control physics.
I slid into a curb and apparently just completely, like, effed the suspension and the alignment. But I didn't realize that until, again, you know, months later when I hear the sound. And what apparently had happened is that the alignment had slowly and irrevocably gotten worse. And the wheel was now rubbing up against the tire was rubbing against the inside of the wheel well. And what it was basically doing was just planing off the rubber from my tire.
You don't need it, really.
Yes. No.
The traction?
It's on the side. The rubber on the side is almost incidental, really.
It's not like that holds the air in or anything.
No.
And so you know how on your car, I think as of like right now, there's like the tread is showing or the steel belting is showing on the, you know, in the inside or was?
Not anymore because the other morning I woke up and I had a flat tire, okay, as you'll recall. So better change that now.
I also had that flat tire, but the flat tire happened when I was going like 80 miles an hour on a back road. And just poof, and immediately just, you know, again into a ditch with that. And then just here's the best part is the punchline of the story where I'm you know, and I'm like some 16-year-old dirtbag, and you know, in my Apollo the Sun God shirt and my horrible mullet, and you know, and you know, and now I'm not listening to Boston. Now I am in fact listening to the first Badco album with it, with, ooh, you know, with the matchbook jammed underneath it to keep it aligned correctly. And I'm sitting there in God, where the hell was it? I think it was in a town called Prosser, if anybody knows where Prosser is. Prosser is a horrible place. But I was driving there to pick up, you know, some girl, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting, and this is the car goes off the road, I'm in a ditch. I wait there for a while, not very long, actually, and then a cop, you know, comes by, and he pulls over to the side of the road, and he gets out, and he said, so, you know, what happened here? And I said, well, I don't know, I think I had a blowout or whatever. And he came around, and he said, yeah, it looks like your alignment, you know, eventually wore through the tire. And I said, yes, and he said, I swear to God, and then he just says, well, I'm sure somebody will be along soon. And he gets on the car, and he just, like, drove off.
I'm getting out of here, though, because there's wolves in the, around here.
That's, I mean, really, and then he just, yeah, but this is where all that raping happens, so I'm not going to stay. So he just left.
He just hears a dumbass under his breath,
which
just
I think
walking
I,
away.
And I did deserve that. It's not like the taxpayer dollars should have been spent on my stupid ass. So I sat there for, like, half an hour until I think by sheer coincidence, like, a guy that I sort of knew from school, like, happened by or something and took pity on me and drove me. So there was a final thing, and then we'll get to the actual show. But you just mentioned the keeping the guardrail. Like, I started out on the wrong foot because when my dad was teaching me to drive that Jeep Renegade, when he was giving me the lessons on how to drive a stick shift, I careened into a gas pump at a Shell station with that. where the guy, like, I've never seen anybody have to come out and hit the big red off button for the fuel pumps or whatever.
Yeah.
But that guy did, because it's that thing of easing in, you know, to get the gas. You know, okay, let it off slowly, slowly, slowly. And, of course, I just let go. And then I just go, boom, right into the gas pump. And I did not tear it completely out of the ground, but it was leaning, like, many degrees to port.
In your defense, though, who teaches their kid to drive in a gas station parking lot?
That's the thing. And also, I think I'm pretty sure he was drunk at that point as well. So
just pull it right in here.
Of course you ran into it. You had cigarette smoke in your eyes, so it's kind of hard for you to really make out where you were.
It was like one of those news stories where it's like they arrest the 9-year-old for driving the car, but it's like, that's, you know, dad's been pounding Meisterbrau all day, and there's just no other way to get the car home.
That kid's been a problem driver since he was 4.
I had to write a check for like $467 or something for it. It's just unbelievable.
I just imagine, though, for all the women that you've not impressed with your driving prowess, just this army of strapping young tow truck drivers that just seem to come along and are just like, so do you need a ride home then, pretty lady? And then you're just sort of left there with like a Charlie Brown music playing as you slowly take your Buster Browns down the street.
That's an accurate depiction of the situation. Yes. Right. Yes, it is. So that's why, by the way, you'll notice that even now, if I have the opportunity, I let my wife drive everywhere. I just realize that there are certain things that are not for me, and driving is one of them.
Yeah, you drove me home once, and yeah, you're a little scary.
Well, I mean,
working out a lot of rage, are we?
As an adult, I have never, I've been in one accident as an adult, which was my fault. But I actually think I drive, I put it this way, I drive much better than I used to. Because, you know, just because I think I realized that I had used up all of my free shots. I mean, I really
should. You drive a little faster than you should, and you take let's call them a few unnecessary chances. You did everything correctly, and you didn't hit anything.
Now, when you say took unnecessary chances, what is that?
I think, you know, the sort of cutting things a little bit close when you're, like, say, merging or taking turns and
well,
stuff like
I just
that.
I do drive aggressively,
yeah.
Which is not to say that I'm an angry driver, but like you, I drove, you know, it's not like I'm from Manhattan or something, but I drove in a lot of places that are not like Portland. And if you spend any time driving in Southern California, it's like you just have to, you know, it's like you just...
Every ride could be your last.
Well, and also it's like, you know, if you're merging... Like, driving 20 miles under the speed limit isn't going to work if you're on the 405 or something. Yeah. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and as we've talked about before, the biggest difference between, you know, metropolitan areas like Los Angeles, where I grew up learning to drive, and people here, is that sort of changing lanes and merging thing where I was taught it's called, you know, a turn indicator. You're indicating to the people in the – you look to see if there's a space – You gauge your speed, you turn on the indicator and say, I'm getting over now.
It's not asking permission.
Yeah.
You're telling.
Here, people seem to believe you're acting for it. You turn it on. They turn it on first. Then they look to see if someone will let them go.
Right.
That's not how it works. No. That's not how you're supposed to.
No. So that is my – if I drive anything, it is – I do drive like a man with a purpose. That is
yes. Yes, you do.
And a lot of people just drive because, like, they apparently don't care when they get home. You know, today, tomorrow, next week, doesn't matter. They'll get there eventually. You know, and I just – I cannot – that's the thing I cannot abide. All right. And so forth. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
How's your week, sir?
Not bad. I had a couple of comedy shoes that I did. Some great, some less than
– You were at the What's It Lounge.
The Mudai Lounge
yes.
on Tuesday. And then last night I did the agenda on 82nd Avenue.
And how did that go?
Well, Mudai Lounge, very intimate. You know, as one does a lot of Ethiopian restaurants, you know, you do a lot of, you know, comedy there.
As one does,
you know. The environment sort of screamed, please, live entertainment. But no, it was really good. I went on last. There's a lot of really really good comedians and comedians. Apparently there was an unspoken agreement that at least 90% of the performers will be wearing suits. I was not one of the people informed of such. So I show up like, you know, wearing like a ratty T-shirt and jeans, you know, as is my wont. I'm looking around. I'm like, I feel like I'm
going to... Here's your headliner.
Yeah. I'm like the... apparently I'm the odd man out in this madman, you know, business meeting. So, but overall went well. And then last night at the agenda...
I don't think I know where that is.
It is down, it's right off of Division.
Division and 82nd?
Yeah, so it's, that's right.
There's like a muffler hubcap place or something right there?
There is, it's like spitting distance from the TikTok.
Yeah, okay, I know where that is.
Yeah, it's just like
the TikTok.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Ladies of the night get in free, apparently, at the agenda. But no, it was a good time all around, and I'm gearing up because next week begins the Portland Comedy Contest that I am in. So
now, what is that? Is it like a bracketed sort of a thing?
Yes, the first week is from the 30th through the 4th of June, and then the following week will be the second heat with I think it's there's like 32 people competing, so like 2 weeks of 16 comedians going on. They take the top eight from both weeks. That makes up the semifinals, and then take the top eight from that. That makes up the finals, you know, and then 4 months from now we find out who, you know, is still alive.
Who is it? Is it done by the audience or by a panel of judges? Or
a little bit of both. I believe there's going to be a selected group of judges that will be at these various events, and it's going to be some shows in Portland, some in Gresham, some in Mount Angel. So it's going to be like, it's going to run the gamut of human emotion and location.
Is this just, I mean, the idea...
And hairstyle.
Absolutely.
And the Gresham and Mount Angel.
Yeah.
I mean, is that sort of a weird, that's a bit of a strange dichotomy there. I mean, I think it's two very different audiences.
Yeah. Going into Mount Angel is like driving into a Stephen King short story.
It really is.
Yeah. Like if the West Coast had a dairy, then this that would truly be it.
People can, and this is open to the public, these?
Yeah, if you want to come and show some support or what have you. Monday will be at the Boiler Room, which is on 3rd and Davis, downtown Portland. And all the information will be up on my Facebook here periodically. So
excellent. And that's at BigJimWillig.com, which just redirects to the Facebook page. It is BigJimWillig.com. All right, well, before we do anything else, let's do, wait, let's do this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Fire officials are investigating after a St. Lucie County firefighter, this is of course in Florida, allegedly took an amputated foot from a crash scene last week. The attorney for Carl Lambert, 46, of Melbourne, Florida, said that his client's leg had to be amputated after he was involved in a traffic crash Friday on Interstate 95 in Port St. Lucie. Lambert was airlifted to St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach, but his leg was left behind. Attorney Raymond Christian said in a telephone interview with a news source that one of the firefighters at the scene took the severed body part because she, quote, was some kind of training person for cadaver dogs, and she basically took the leg.
She basically took the leg.
Yeah.
Not entirely took the leg.
Basically.
Not in point of fact. All right.
Christian said Lambert was notified by the Florida Highway Patrol investigator Wednesday after the patient was airlifted. He said at a news conference, it was alleged that one of our firefighters removed a foot from the accident. The firefighter's name was Cindy Ekonomu. It's alleged that she brought the amputated foot to the fire station number 10 and had a family member bring it home to use for training her cadaver dogs.
That was going to actually be my question, is how is it that they've determined that the foot was missing? I mean, if it's kind of a gnarly accident, I mean, it's not like you can really account for everything there.
Fire District spokesman Buddy Emerson said, it's not normal for remains or pieces or parts to be removed from an accident scene other than by the appropriate authorities. This is a very serious allegation, Perry said. We have an obligation to the patient, to the public, and to those involved. She remains on duty pending the outcome of an internal investigation.
Okay.
And I actually, this story was actually sent to me by a listener. And if I find, I misplaced the thing here.
Nancy Sinatra?
Well, actually, he said, our listener John, who said, a car salesman friend of mine that lives in Florida says he just sold a car to this guy, the guy who lost the foot. He says the city has offered $3 million in settlement, but his lawyer is holding out to get over $10 million.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like that. Seems like the facts are really in his favor there.
Yeah.
All right. I refrain from making a lead foot joke because someone has died.
No, the guy didn't die.
No, he's not dead. I think he's just missing the foot.
Yeah, he's just missing a foot.
And that he just lost the foot. But, you know, that's what I was in, like, you know, it seems like there's, you know, that's a thing that could be flung any number of places. I just didn't know how they immediately figured out that she took it, but then she brought it in.
To the fire station. Yeah, I'm just taking this home with me for the dogs.
Look what I'm using to train my dog. Isn't it great?
Yeah, so. And somebody went, I don't think you're supposed to do
that,
Cindy.
It's fine. Yeah. Who's going to come back for it?
Seriously.
He's not using it. Let's do our clown watch.
Let's see. Here is your clown watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Dateline Boston. A man on a small bike dressed as a clown yelled at a woman getting off the green line in Newton at Riverside Station. According to police reports, on May 23rd, police were called to Hancock Street after a man wearing clown makeup, a rainbow wig, plaid shirt and jeans, riding a, quote, small bicycle, yelled at a train passenger. The woman said the man asked her where Waltham was, and when she didn't respond, he asked louder and began to approach her in an aggressive manner. According to police reports, the man in clown makeup and the colorful wig was seen talking to younger girls on the train earlier in the day. Waltham MBTA Transit and Lasalle College Police were notified, according to reports.
Hey, here's a thing. Well, I got two thoughts. One, speaking of clowns, I mean, I have many, many thoughts, but the two main thoughts I have are, A, so you just started playing Left 4 Dead again because you got a new laptop, because your old laptop was not really, it was a little underpowered.
It was.
I
quite literally last night started playing Left 4 Dead as well, so.
The first or the second?
The first.
Are you on Xbox or on PC? Or?
Xbox.
Yeah.
So we could play with each other. We could run around kill zombies together.
So here's the, I was a huge Left 4 Dead fan, and when I was at Wonder Northwest a couple weeks ago, I was on this podcast, this A Jumps B Shoots, about video games, and the stock question they were asking everybody that day, their sort of survey question was, what is the last, you know, the most recent video game you've been playing a lot of? And I said that I've been working on a lot of stuff, you know, and so I didn't have a lot of time. But when I left off, when I was last a big Xbox player, it was about a year and a half ago, since I've really been playing a lot, and I was playing Left 4 Dead 2, which does feature, by the way, zombie clowns.
Yes, it does.
And, I mean, it's just awesome. Also, there's that downloadable content. Now, there's that patch where you can actually, where the Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 people can actually cross over, and the characters from one can play in the other, which is just like gold. So I didn't know if you actually owned Left 4 Dead 2, and if you were fully prepared for the zombie clowns that just rush at you out of goddamn nowhere,
yeah,
by the way.
I don't know.
Oh, no, your nightmares live somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's where they
and
come
it's just
from.
A lot of like, you know, kind of coming at you. Like, God. You know, it's all kinds of unnerving. Also, this, Don't you think, and I know that you, for obvious reasons, might not feel like this is such a swell idea, but don't you think that that just as like our next, like as some sort of a, you know, some sort of a marketing shuck, that we ought to just, that we ought to have a Rick Emerson show, like an ENN scary clown who just stands downtown and just stares at people. and then occasionally just like licks his fingers and then hands them like a card with like the name of like
yeah,
the website.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier in the show. We were trying to come up with some kind of a mascot. We're thinking Scary Clown. And I think, yeah, Scary Clown.
Propose Scary Clown?
We did propose Scary Clown because we liked the idea of like talking to somebody like Dave Helfrey about helping us to plan a really disturbing Scary Clown and then having him just like, you know, hang out every once in a while in like Pioneer Square and hand out flyers.
I will throw my tiny little hat into that arena. I will be that scary clown. Really? I could be that scary clown.
And you've got a beard too. As somebody who's afraid of people in clown makeup, I do have to say, there's something extra disturbing about a clown with a beard and with the grease paint like in the beard and stuff. It is extra creepy.
It's very much like Rob Zombie kind of House of a Thousand Corpses, Dr. Satan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's definitely something because it just seems wrong. It seems unnatural. And plus it indicates that they take the clowning thing
too far.
They're not going to let a little facial hair stand in the way of that. And they just, you know, and they, you know, they just, lacquer it right over.
Shakes the clown where they hang out at like clown bars and they, you know, associate with fellow clowns and, you know.
Yeah. And it's so between that, you know, you get yourself a good pointy smile. And I think you're good to go in terms of the terror.
Yeah, like you, this guy, for example.
Yeah, that's no good.
Oh, he watches my kids. He's great. Yeah, beautiful singing voice. Really beautiful.
No, I mean, whatever, you know, and the best thing is the clown wouldn't even really have to do anything.
No.
I mean, the clown could just sort of just make unbroken eye contact and just glower for long periods of time. And then again, you know, like, here you go, here's a card. And I mean, maybe just stare at Stephanie Strickland, like, through that window while she's trying to do the, you know.
And hold up that big Rick Emerson Show sign we've got.
Yeah.
And then put it back down and then just keep staring.
And then just occasionally just wave and, like, do the finger curl, like, come here, you know? And then just be gone when she goes outside. I shouldn't say that. She was really nice to me when I was on there. But I mean, you know, just, you know, something with
a
little panache.
Yeah.
A little
but
flavor.
But I do like the idea that we just have the Emerson Scary Clown just show up occasionally at random places for a while and pass some things out and then just vanish.
Nothing about this idea that I don't love.
No, I mean, and occasionally just do something, you know, like occasionally just something weird, like just, you know, like the clown could just stand there for many hours and then just start eating spaghetti out of a bowling bag, you know, and then zip it back up and then, you know, dab off the corner of his mouth and then just go back to staring, you know, and just like without explanation. You know what somebody needs to do is like a combination of like the scary clown and then that guy who pretends he's a statue, but then occasionally like moves to take a quarter from you. There should be like a scary clown statue that then randomly moves and like lunges at passersby.
See, that's I think where
I think maybe no lunging.
Lunging is the
not
line.
Not actually grabbing.
No, well, furtive movement can.
Yeah, lunging can still be deemed, you know, aggressive and threatening.
To hand you flowers.
You will take these flowers. It's for you.
How else will he shake your hand and welcome you to our fair city, Don?
Blind you with his little flower that he has in his
lapel. You don't hand somebody a bouquet like this.
Exactly. Well, our whole thing.
So I give flowers to my mother.
I mean, years ago we had our plan. Many, many years ago, I think this is like back in the KOTK days of the show, was just to get. And this seems like a thing that would probably go bad for us, which is why we didn't do it. Years ago, the plan was just to get a clown and give him a whole bunch of balloons and just pick some like dark, windy road somewhere and just have him stand there and just wave at cars at 2 a.m. You know, and not do anything either. Just like, imagine if you were driving along like some windy road in like Tigard or Beaverton or Malala or something at like 2 a.m. and then there was just a clown with a whole clutch of balloons just like slowly waving at you from the side of the road as you drove by.
Oh, I would pee myself.
Yeah, and it wasn't doing anything. Didn't try to communicate with you. Didn't have a sign. Wasn't looking for a ride. Wasn't selling anything. Just standing there in the darkness and waving at you as you drove by in your car. I mean, how many people...
And then when you double back, and gone.
Gone. How many people do you think would have to see that before, like, the city would officially, like, demand some sort of investigation, before they were just flooded with worried calls about it?
I bet, like, one in the first five people who saw it would call 911.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing that would make its way into local newscasts almost immediately.
You'd also want to make sure that your clown person was, like, on the other side of, say, a guardrail or something, in case somebody decided they just wanted to run him down.
Yeah.
See you in hell, clown!
Excellent. Here's Don Taylor.
Television channels in India have been ordered not to broadcast overtly sexual deodorant ads that use female models in racy storylines. The channels have been given 5 days to modify the offending advertisements or take them off the air. India's administration ministry said in a statement, the ads brim with messages aimed at tickling libidinous male instincts. None of the companies named by the ministry have so far responded. The ministry said the advertisements offended good taste and decency and appeared indecent, vulgar, and suggestive.
What is happening in their deodorant ads?
Well, there's one in which a woman finds a man's deodorant so stimulating she begins to undress. An advertisement for Wild Stone in India depicts women lusting after men who are just wearing deodorant. So, you know, it's the whole old, high karate thing of like, or the Axe body spray.
That's what always gets you is the old high karate thing.
Well, it's what they're doing with Axe body spray now. It's like you just spritz the stuff all over you like, oh my God, you're irresistible. I must have you now. So, they said the message, the products arouse women's sexuality. It said they portrayed women as lustily hankering after men under the influence of such deodorants. And the depiction and portrayal of women in these ads is overtly sexual. The ministry said that it violates India's advertising code, which states that cable operators should ensure that the portrayal of the female form is tasteful and aesthetic and within the well-established norms of good taste and decency.
This is like when I was a kid and I somehow thought that close-up toothpaste was like an aphrodisiac. That it was like some weird sort of like dentally applied Spanish fly that would just, you know, women would be yours.
Is that close-up that you're using?
I mean, because that was the whole thing with close-up. It was like their whole ad, probably still is, their whole ad campaign was just based on just locking lips with somebody.
So somewhere in a U pull it yard, there's a totaled out renegade that in the glove box to this day.
A maverick full of toothpaste.
Yes, exactly.
By the way, the brands affected by this ban include Wild Stone, Addiction Dio, and yes, Axe.
Addiction Dio.
That's wonderful. I haven't thought about close-up toothpaste actually in quite some time. Although I did see they sell a lot of it at the dollar store. I buy myself a lot of dollar store toothpaste, and because here's the thing about shopping for toothpaste at the dollar store is it's like a walk through advertisements past, because all you see are like weird 70s brands.
Yeah,
it's like a lot of Ultra Bright and Pepsodent, and then close-up as well. Along with that, what is it, that toothpaste that I had here in the drawer?
Oh, yeah, the Sensodyne or whatever it is.
But it was actually called, I don't know if you've ever seen this, I have this dollar store toothpaste that I, you know, because I have a toothbrush here. And it was great because the package actually said, you know, whatever, you know, like ultra white toothpaste, sensitive, extreme, which is like great. You know, it makes no sense at all. But it was just like where like discarded brands just sort of went to be sold to a gullible public.
I love that depending on which Dollar Tree you go to, some have, or at least they had these comic book twofers. In other words, like these two comic books from a series that never took off.
Really?
Together. And then each one came with a different trading card, and you would get either A-Team, ALF, or Goonies trading cards. And I remember it was my buddy's, it was his birthday, and I'm like, I'm tearing my hair out because I had to work, and then I had to run over there real quick for the party, and I had no time to shop for a present, so I'm like, I'm going to go to the Dollar Tree and get him something really crappy, but maybe we can get a good joke out of it. And I find this like a gold mine, so now I'm like rifling through all the different ones that they had, trying to find like the doubles so that I could get. I spent like $15 at the Dollar Tree just buying comic books. And when I gave it to him, he was ecstatic because he had found it about a week before, and he's like, I already dumped like $40 in comic books, and this is like the best present ever.
And it's all crap, or they just pulled the plug after two issues.
Yeah, it was.
Or like Horseshack the comic, like really wasn't gonna or whatever. I mean, is it because this would have been some years ago, right? Or,
yeah. It's like, you know, Spider-Man versus the Tickling Mist or something like that. It's just like, I don't really know what your superpower is, and I don't really, you're not grabbing me with the cover art, so.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Speaking of the dollar store, I have a dollar store related story.
Really?
Yes,
fantastic.
I do. Police in a Chicago suburb said they arrested a woman accused of biting several packages of beef jerky and returning them to a store shelf in a dollar store. Grays Lake police said Wendy Staples, 50, refused to pay for the jerky after a Dollar General store manager observed her biting through the plastic of the packages and then putting them back on the shelf. Sergeant Scott Hymos said Staples allegedly pushed the manager in the chest when she was asked to leave. He said Staples claimed to be a law enforcement officer during her arrest. He said, "We know she's not because we've dealt with her before."
What sort of a weird fetish is that, that you're biting jerky at the dollar store?
Hymos said, and this is the actual, well, she's been arrested with criminal damage to property, battery, and criminal trespass. And then the policeman, Sergeant Hymos, says, "Investigators do not know the motive behind the jerky biting."
Yeah, I would imagine.
I do. She was on a stakeout. Yeah? Yeah. Huh? Anyone? Yeah. Anyone? Come on. Come on.
That's just odd, though. I mean, it's like I can see that, if, you know, it's like some weird variation of that pica thing where it's like chicks eat, you know, like pieces of the sofa, you know, whatever, and like particle board.
Well, you know, with jerky, sometimes it's kind of the soft, chewy jerky. Sometimes it's the really, really hard jerky. Yeah. Maybe she was just trying to find out through the package.
It's like tapping a melon.
Which type it was, yeah.
There exactly. You go. So it's trying to figure out exactly when the papaya is done enough.
Yes.
So she didn't actually tear anything off. She just would sort of bite through the plastic and be like, I don't like that one.
She might not have bit through the plastic, though. She might have just bitten the plastic. To test the pliability of the jerky itself. So the dollar store is just like an ever unfolding, you know, the world of wonder, though. I mean, there's nothing about the dollar store that isn't interesting. The last time, in fact, it was at the dollar store where I got the toothpaste here. The single best indicator of the dollar store and their clientele this is the one that's across the street from Lloyd's Center, where there's like Lloyd's Center that you head toward like Sandy or Broadway or something. It's like you're heading away from the mall, but you're like toward like Great Harvest or something. But there's a dollar store, and my wife and I there, and I was getting the toothpaste. And then as we were standing in the checkout line, they're selling pregnancy tests.
Yes.
And see, the great thing about that is that they're selling it to their clientele for whom it's an impulse buy. That's, if it's at the checkout line, it's not like it's a thing you went to the store to get. It's that you're in the checkout line, you're going, "Well, I'm probably going to need a few of these anyway in the night. I mean, who are we kidding, right? I mean, I'm going to be back for these regardless. I might as well get them now, huh?"
Bought the condoms here. It's only
Or it just slipped your mind until that moment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that.
Or you're like lowballing, like, "I'm not paying $3 for pregnancy tests. I need to find a chick. This one is more my speed."
Do you know how much these cost at Walgreens? They're only 99 cents.
It's just going to pee on it. We're not going to make a mosaic out of it.
It's a thing that you just assume you will have a use for at some point in the near future.
And God knows, if I'm trying to find out if I am pregnant or not, I'm going to want to go with the cheapest pregnancy test I could possibly find at the skeeziest store available. Really, that's something I really want to, like, you know, go low on.
Gary's secondhand pregnancy tests. Think positive, that's our slogan.
Let's do one more here and we'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side with Humor Me, Comedy 101, and a bit later we'll talk about tonight's double feature happening at the Hollywood Theater.
Let's do our Corpse Watch.
Here is your Corpse Watch for Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio. Wait for it. Yeah, there we go.
I'm
program.
Digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
A few months after a friend of Carol Kingsbury's sister died and was cremated, a court gave the two women permission to enter his retirement condo and get his final affairs in order. Excuse me. Alan Dunn, who had committed suicide at 86, had told his neighbors that his wife was in a nursing home. But when the sisters went into his fetid apartment Tuesday afternoon,
excellent,
Kingsbury made a gruesome discovery. There was a body in a chest freezer on the porch. Investigators believe it could be Dunn's wife, Margaret, and that he kept her death secret for more than a decade so he could collect her benefits. "He never gave any indication that something like that was going on," Kingsbury said. "We had no hint or anything that he was capable of doing that." The county investigators said that the body is that of a 78 to 80-year-old woman. They have not yet positively identified her, however. They purchased the condo in 1994, according to property records. 5 years later, Alan Dunn was named guardian of his wife and assumed possession of all her property and income. Neighbors agree Alan Dunn wasn't a favorite around the complex. He seldom attended condo meetings or social events. And they said that they hadn't seen Margaret in at least 10 years. "She was a lovely lady, very educated," said one of the women.
Crisp, fresh.
A former condo association president also was concerned for Margaret, looked into Dunn's story, said the current association president, whose name is, and I'm not making this up, Jack Goth.
Excellent.
But he hadn't found any indication of foul play.
Is this like a lot of what you just missed her? You know, but like over a decade. Well, she was just here. She's at the store.
She's in a nursing home.
Yeah.
She left in the middle of the night.
Peace Corps. Lots of peace. Crazy about the Peace Corps.
Kingsbury said that he was an obstinate man. He didn't believe in taxes. He hated car insurance. He was just a very anti-establishment type person. That attitude won him very few friends among his neighbors, but Kingsbury also knew him as a kind-hearted man that her sister brought to family Thanksgiving.
Gave ice cream to the children in the neighborhood.
Yeah, Tuesday they expected the home to smell because of rotted food and remnants of the suicide left festering since the electricity was turned off in November. But they certainly weren't expecting it to smell, apparently, as bad as it did.
Well, I was going to say, if it smelled, I mean, really, the fact that they were not able to just smell the stench of death before this indicates that, you know, whatever brand of freezer he was dealing with clearly is doing the job. I mean, that's an airtight seal.
That's horrible. I feel that this might just be a misunderstanding. This might just been like, you know, a couple getting older, kind of like Up. You know, we're like, you know, very, very, very loving couple that's known each other for years. Still very much childlike at heart. Maybe like a game of hide and go seek went horribly awry. clearly, they didn't see that episode of Punky Brewster.
Or just some sort of homemade hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah. You know, no. or could you imagine them at the Sears just be like, oh, I don't know, this freezer might not be good for my needs. Honey, why don't you just hop in there real quick and just sort of lie in there. So we'll see if the door will close. There we go.
Maybe she had a horrible time with hot flashes and was trying to cool down and propped open the lid, but, you know, with a stick, didn't work out.
And he came out to see if she was okay, and he accidentally knocked the stick and it closed.
Yeah.
I've seen enough sitcoms.
The cat knocked it over.
Yeah.
That could have happened.
Accidents happen all the time.
By the way, speaking of things like this, you were talking about playing the game of hide and seek and getting the freezer and the whatever. Were you here when I mentioned the sensory deprivation tank thing?
Yes.
Okay. So my wife, being you know, as she is the best wife ever, actually she actually went ahead and got me sort of a, you know, like a certificate or whatever to go actually have, you know, to have that done, to go to the place where you get into the get into the deprivation tank. And so there's a
Lipton's cup of Rick.
There's actually things to consider prior to booking your session. And then it has a lot of you should not have, I guess, you know, they don't want you to have any recent, you know, like recent tattoos or piercings or whatever, and where you've like broken the skin. But then it just says, it is not recommended for epileptics whose epilepsy is not under medical control, people who are under the influence of alcohol or drugs, people with many open sores. I don't know what many is. I mean, presumably,
I got a couple. I don't know.
That's like a you must be this non-sore covered to ride this ride.
Gary, come over here and count this guy real quick.
Well, it's highly super highly salinated water.
That would hurt.
So
I would imagine.
any open wounds are going to hurt like a son of a bitch.
Screaming is totally normal.
Or for those with suicidal tendencies to use the tank. So there you go. So I'll be trying that sometime in the next week or so, and you can just if I don't come back, you'll know that perhaps I inadvertently fell into one of those categories. So that'll be sometime next week, and I'm gonna be doing that.
I have some news, some breaking exciting.
Is it actual breaking news?
Yes.
It's not. This isn't like another dead guy from Taxi, is it?
No, it's
all
not.
Right, hold on
not.
A second. Here's your Jeff Conaway dead.
What?
Totally dead.
No way.
Hella dead. Yeah. Full on dead. Completely dead.
So this is a story that really depressed me and upset me when I first heard it on the news this morning before work. No.
And now you get to share
it turns
with
out,
all of us.
It turns out good, though. There was one of those adoption things for pets at the Beaverton PetSmart store. And there was a dog, a white lab mix named Sunny, who's a few years old and like needs some kind of special medication. And they were looking for somebody to foster the dog. And a couple of guys walked up and stole it. They just stole the dog. And the thing is, you know, again, this is a dog that had been in an abusive home.
Oh,
it had been
geez.
Taken to a rescue organization. They were trying to find a new home for it, and it needed some kind of medication. And a couple of guys stole the dog. Well, it has just been reported a couple hours ago that the dog has been found and Sunny is safe. Sunny was actually found by a woman and her two children near a busy intersection of Walker Road this morning. They grabbed the dog, took it to the Bonnie Hayes Animal Shelter, And Shirley Jennings, whose family is fostering the dog, says, I'm so happy he's safe. Not knowing was the worst. He looks great. The two men who stole the dog are still at large. They had expressed interest in Sonny last weekend and took him to play in a park near the store, saying, you know, we might want to adopt him. And then they just took him and didn't bring him back. So, but, and apparently then just let him go at some point. Probably after it was on the news that they'd stolen the damn dog.
I was hoping the dog had savagely attacked them in some way. They'd lost an eye or
but
something.
But Sonny has been found and is safe.
Excellent. There you go. That just in. All right. Fantastic. All right. We will do this. We'll come back on the other side with Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Also, good friend Siegfried Zieliger is going to join us here in just a few. We will talk about tonight's zombie double feature, which is happening at the Hollywood Theater. That is Demons and Night of the Comet. And it happens tonight around 9 p.m. At the Hollywood Theater. Again, that is Demons and Night of the Comet. That's going to be coming up tonight. So we've got more on the way. Stay there. The Rick Emerson radio program continues in just a skosh. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-7200. 6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. We'll have more news here in just a few. Also, our good friend Siegfried Zieler is going to be stepping in to talk about the zombie double feature happening tonight at the Hollywood Theater. That is tonight around 9 p.m. 40th and Sandy. As we get ready to wrap up our May of the Dead celebration. So tonight it's Demons and Night of the Comet back-to-back. Starts around 9 p.m. And then tomorrow, that is Saturday the 28th at Guardian Games. Going to be zombie game day all day long. That is happening tomorrow. You can find out more about all of that at mayofthedead.com. That is mayofthedead.com. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
Hello, I'm fine.
All right. So Siegfried is running a few minutes late. He was sent me a text cursing the traffic.
Okay.
Without further ado, what we should probably do is I don't want the humor meet to get endlessly delayed.
Don't want the laughs to get stale.
That's right. So we'll roll that here in just a moment, and so forth. All right. Seems like it's something else of great importance that I was going to say. Here's what I was going to say. I was going to say that Humor Me Comedy 101 is brought to you this week, as is the rest of the Rick Emerson Show every single day, by our good friend Joe Squires and his company Squires Electric, about whom you can find out more at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can also call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. If you haven't gone to their Facebook page this week or in the last few days, I encourage you to do so because A, they still got the photograph of the snake curled up around the electrical box. B, they got the melted doll face there still. C, they got the thing where like the tree tipped over during a windstorm, hit the cable, which swung into the house, which made contact with some metal, which sparked, which arced, which did another thing, which set the whole deal ablaze.
That's how the Chicago Fire got started.
Exactly. And then they've also got what he calls simply the worst wiring job he's ever seen in his life, which is... I mean, you got to imagine the bar is set pretty high for that as well. So do yourself a favor. A, it's a good self-esteem boost for you because you go, well, I'm not that guy. And also, just by dint of looking at the Squires Electric Facebook page, you are already setting your path, your feet on the path and yourself on the road toward having the right person do the job. Because let's be honest, that right person is almost never you. So you can contact them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call them if you like. It's 503-252-1609. And while you're there on their Facebook page, go ahead and hit the like button if you would as well. That would you would do much to earn our favor if you would do that. They are proud sponsors and supporters of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program, as well as Legion of News. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They are Squires Electric. Find out more about them right there at squireselectric.com. Excellent. Fantastic. And now, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, will you please give your attention to our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig, for this week's installment of a feature we call Humor Me Comedy 101.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Now, the filter of comedy is one that takes a keen eye, quick tongue, and razor-sharp wit to maintain. To take in all that popular culture consumes and to find a unique thread with which to exploit and expose the humor inherent therein, well, that would be like Odysseus using his garment to comment on the quality of airline peanuts. Am I right, Dennis?
Yeah, I'm just narcissistic enough to love that.
Dennis Miller. He's the guy that Stephen Hawking would call to plan his bachelor party.
Only other animals besides humans who have sex for fun as well as reproduction are dolphins and chimpanzees. And why not? They're great.
While most other acts of his day were reading 1001 jokes, jibes, and insults, Dennis was reading the Mahatma Gita for cliche fart jokes.
How do you get the word fundamental when you're looking at a tattooed potbelly chain smoker whipping a hissing rattlesnake around like Prince's mic cord while screaming in unintelligible tongues like Brad Pitt's character in Snatch with Tourette's syndrome? You know
what he said. From the beginning, Mr. Miller rebuilt the news update desk for SNL. Then breaking out on his own, he brought his satire to HBO and CNBC. There was that experiment with Monday Night Football.
Pop culture has turned the brain into the body's new appendix. No real function, and it could quite possibly blow up and kill you.
Yeah, watch it, Dennis. And with that, I turn things over to the other two mental monoliths sharing the studio with me at this time. Mr. Rick, I don't want to get off on a rant here. Emerson and Don, are we ready for some footnotes? Taylor, your thoughts on the knuckle-dragging troglodyte known as Dennis Miller.
Don Taylor in the back.
I don't really have much to say about his actual work.
Mm-hmm.
He is what he is. He's just brilliant, absolutely brilliant, aware of his brilliance.
crystal clear with zero things to obscure that.
Yeah, and a genius with words. And what I have, though, is I have two actual in-person Dennis Miller anecdotes. One was that I saw him perform in California, and he was the headliner at the comedy club that we went to. It was the Comedy Mansion Club in Hermosa Beach. And when he finally got on stage, he ran through his entire act in what felt like about a minute and a half. He's a very fast talker to begin with, but I have never in my life heard anybody talk so fast. And he paced his act so quickly that it was just basically saying things just slow enough that you could hear it and laugh.
Yeah.
And we didn't know why. It seemed very, very bizarre. And then he went off stage, and then we were told that there was a special surprised guest, that Robin Williams was showing up just as a surprise. Hooray. So obviously Miller was like running through his stuff as quickly as he could so they could, you know, bring on Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So that was kind of it. But the thing is about that night, I had actually just seen him in person about a week earlier. I was at the Improv hanging out with some friends in the bar, and I heard a voice behind me coming in the front door and turned around because a very distinctive voice. It was Dennis Miller walking into the Improv with a friend of his. And he looked like he had just rolled out of bed. He hadn't shaved. His hair was just disheveled. He was wearing the most rumpled and wrinkled and nasty-looking white dress shirt I've ever seen. Like he had just, like, had it wadded up in a ball next to the bed and had thrown it on. Came walking through the bar. It was packed. It was a Friday night, and it was absolutely packed. He came walking through, came walking past me and my friends. I kind of turned and backed up to give him room to walk through. He started to walk past me, looked me in the eye, then looked at my breasts, then kept walking. Then we were going inside, so somebody pointed at us like you ladies, your table's ready. So I had to walk by him a second time, and he did it again. And it was like obviously just a reflexive thing for him that he probably did with every woman on the planet who was not hideous.
Yeah.
Just like face tits. Okay, and then moves on.
It was just part of the flow chart.
Right. Yeah. So when I actually saw him doing it his set a week later, I actually considered the green room area was just back past the restrooms, and so the comics would wait right by the bathrooms to go on. And I saw him standing there right before he went on, and I came very, very close to just getting up and walking over there. And as I passed him, going, "Remember these?" And I thought, yeah, but you know, how special am I? I knew that he probably wouldn't.
It is one of those things where it's simultaneously insulting and flattering, you know, in that, you know, it's...
Even the massive intellect of Dennis Miller can be momentarily frozen and shut off by your bosoms.
Not once, but twice.
Seriously.
One for each, I feel.
And when I got back to the table, it became apparent, too, after talking to my friends that sadly, there are women that would have used that as an opportunity to actually get to know him.
Yeah.
Ooh, he likes me. No, not really.
He likes
no.
parts of you.
Yeah. But that's my only observations, really, of Dennis Miller.
I also have a personal anecdote about Dennis Miller that I'll get to in a second. But I will say that the thing about Dennis Miller is, and the more we do this, the more we realize that, or I realize anyway, that... Not necessarily that this is what it takes to become successful in comedy, but most of the successful comics we discuss have done this, either intentionally or inadvertently, that they have taken one particular facet of their act or of comedy in general, and that they've just polished it to a high shine, and that becomes the thing that they do better than anyone else or that they are more closely identified with. Stephen Wright has the deadpan. Rodney Dangerfield has the self-deprecation. Andy Kaufman had the put-on. Is it a show or is it performance art? And Dennis Miller, of course, is the pop culture reference. I mean, in a way, and there's a lot of things to point to with Dennis Miller. The fact that he's, you know, the fact that he is so hyper-literate and that he does these massive, like, tongue-twisting, Rube Goldberg-esque constructions of sentences.
Yeah.
And in the last few years, you know, he's gotten a lot of attention and from some quarters, you know, a lot of flack for allegedly becoming, you know, a big flame-throwing conservative, which I don't think he is. But I think that he is just so blunt and so razor sharp and just so absolutely dead on in his deconstruction of, explanation of, or if he disagrees with it, his destruction of a certain belief system, that I think when he did embrace certain parts of conservatism, which is specifically was the Iraq War. I mean, that's kind of what it came down to. That was the litmus test for a lot of people that, you know, that he, you know, he's a guy who was still, you know, he's still pro gay marriage. He's still pro drug legalization. He's still, pro legalization of prostitution. He was in favor of the war in Iraq, though, which was enough to sort of earn him, like, you know, you are expelled from the left card. And I think one of the reasons that it infuriated people so much is that he didn't try to parse anything, because he is so brilliant at just zeroing in on the crux of something, the core of something. He's like Michael Moore in that he can boil something down into a probably non-representative summation,
singularity,
but something that feels and sounds really, really sensical and logical, even if it's much more nuanced than he's making it seem. And this is just strictly in terms of his political comedy. He's actually, and I think I've quoted him before, he was talking about the national debt and, you know, the amount of money we owe to China.
Yeah.
And he was actually the one that just said, well, why don't we just not pay it? You know, and it's just, which is, you know, and it's like, I'd never heard anybody actually say that before. I'd never had anybody put it in those terms. But so as much as he's gotten a lot of flack for that, the thing that he, I think, will always be known for is just these massive mouthfuls of words that are always punctuated by huge numbers of pop culture references. And not only that, here's the other great thing about Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller, in his delivery, which some people I think might see as unwavering or as inflexible in terms of his cadence or in terms of the coloring that he puts on certain words. Dennis Miller does what Aaron Sorkin would call driving to the end of the sentence, which is that if you watch an Aaron Sorkin show, and this is largely because his scripts, I think, are so densely written and they're so packed with verbiage. If you watch an Aaron Sorkin program, though, his characters never pause in mid-sentence to ruminate or to ponder. Nobody ever gets halfway through a sentence on the West Wing or Sports Night or Studio 60 or whatever and just says, well, the thing of it is, and then there's like some like internal monologue happening that's played out on their face, because the whole thing is about the rhythm of it. And the rhythm of Aaron Sorkin's dialogue and like David Mamet's dialogue is such that you've got to go da 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 ba da da ba ba ba. Because it's all about ending on that big. And Dennis Miller does that, too, where he drives all the way to the end of the sentence. And I found just one example. And this is anybody who knows Dennis Miller, this is just one of the billions of times that he has done this, where he has put together, he's sort of Carlin-esque in that he puts together sentences in the way that have this viscerally pleasing rhythm to them in terms of. And this all just sounds like such navel-gazing wankery, unless you're somebody that just loves words and the way they sound. But his sentences have all these linguistic like peaks and valleys, and then they end on this huge stop, such as this, where he talked about he talked about getting into a cab in New York City and how bad it smelled. And he said, talking about the cab driver and the cab driver's body odor, and he said, he smelled like a guy eating gorgonzola cheese while getting a permanent in the septic tank of a slaughterhouse. And it's like, I mean, and it's like anybody could put together a long list of things that smell, you know, and the things that are bad and are olfactorily offensive. But it's knowing, it's picking and choosing the right ones. And it's what order do you go in and which one do you end on? And comedy is so much about, you hear so much of the rule of threes and how it's all about the rhythm and the attention and the release of the words. But I mean, that knowing which thing goes first and which thing goes last, and when you use a period and when you use an ellipsis and when you use an and when you and when it's all strung together and when they're, that's half craft and work, and it's half just instinct, and it's a thing that you can't teach, and
it's very Carlin-esque.
Yeah, too, and you know, and also when you think about Dennis Miller and the fact that his comedy is, for all of his hyper literate sensibility and all of the times that he got flack. You know, he got flack from you know, the left for you know, seeming to become right, and he got flack from everybody for when he was on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you think about it, didn't make any sense, because for a guy that does use so many of, you know, those, you know, $12 words, as my grandfather would say, his comedy is really accessible.
Yeah.
You know, like when he was there was some. I don't know. There was some thing about a guy pulling a groin muscle, and how they, you know, some players taken out with a pulled groin muscle because, you know, he was because it was severe, and they were going to have to operate, you know, to repair the damage or whatever. And he said something like, what did he say? It was something to the effect of, well, you know, anytime you're talking about my groin and a sharp scalpel in the same sentence, that's like the Tigris and Euphrates of pure terror, you know? And I heard that used as an example of something that was over the heads of the audience. But you don't have to know what the Tigris and Euphrates are. You don't have to know that there are rivers in Iraq to understand what he's saying there. And it's the comedy is contextually self-reliant in the sense that you can understand what he's saying and find it funny without knowing every single reference. So I don't think he gets enough credit for being simultaneously highbrow and broad-reaching at the same time. Yeah. I mean, that's a tough row to hoe, and The Simpsons do it really well,
Miller
too.
Miller is the brow.
Yeah, I mean, he really is great. I will also say this, and this might be a generational thing. It probably is, especially because things before this I'm familiar with, but the things that in recent years I'm less familiar with. With the possible exception of like your Tina Fey, I would say, for my money, that he's probably the best Weekend Update host that SNL ever had.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the first guys. You know, even if you look back at Chevy Chase, Chevy Chase coasted so much on his persona, and that was the thing that I was watching in reruns, and I wasn't watching it at the time. But I think that is part of it. If you look at those Chevy Chase Weekend Update segments, you know, they're okay, but you can see how much he is banking on the fact that he's Chevy Chase, and there's not a lot of sharpness to it.
Predictability is the death of comedy. Like, if the audience can see where basically they're just waiting for the eventuality, then it's slowly the teeth and the fangs are just falling out slowly, and after a while they're just, you know, it's not palatable anymore. Whereas with Dennis, it was coming from God knows where. It came from all over the map.
Well, and he was a guy that, you know, you can tell he put care into the writing and not just the delivery of it. So much comedy, and you know this, so much of comedy is hack work in that, you know, maybe the script's funny, maybe it's not, but sometimes it doesn't need to be that funny because you get some jerk that just sells everything with a lot of broad facial expressions and, you know, and like kooky inflections on things. Where Miller put just as much care, if not more so, into the writing of it than into the delivery. It wasn't just that he had a clipped kind of kooky way of speaking where he kind of tilted his head back and forth like this. I mean, he obviously polished every word of that thing. He must have known that he had to do it because, as he himself would say, he can't really act. I mean, he's not like a guy that has a million different sort of, that has a lot of different sort of impressions or mannerisms that he can bring to the table as an actor. He's basically got Dennis Miller, and that's kind of all he can do.
Yeah.
So he knew that he had to make it on the strength of the material. And I remember hearing the Off-White album back in, God, like 88, 87, 89, and that was, you know, and just thinking it was just freaking amazing. And, and all the way through his HBO show, some of his aborted attempts at doing a late-night show of his own. I mean, he's another guy, by the way, that you were talking about I was joking about earlier about all the cars I rolled trying to go pick up girls who were never going to put out for me. Dennis Miller's a guy who's been whacked so many times and who's had so many shows canceled on him and has just been, either denied opportunities or had opportunities that were sort of, that were short-lived for whatever reason, you know, but he kind of keeps coming back. And
his HBO show, pre-conservative netballism, was very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
It did that whole thing that I don't think anybody else has really done, next to maybe Bill Maher, where you have this perfect mix of funny and just smart and current event stuff. That it was essential. It really was.
And also, not only did he perfect the whole business of the pop culture reference, but I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's done that sort of establishing something in the cultural consciousness twice, because Dennis Miller almost single-handedly established the rant as a form of comedy and communication. He wasn't the first person to rant about stuff, but he was the first guy to take that word, that description, the rant, and to pair it with a certain kind of acidic, you know, hyper-comedic, but almost angrily hyper-comedic delivery, usually about something that was disproportionately important, of disproportionate unimportance, that, you know, that was so unimportant in the grand scheme of things that it did not deserve this 7-minute sort of angry deconstruction that he put on it. And if you say to anybody, you know, I don't want to get off on a rant here, or, you know, use the word rant, I think most people probably go right to Dennis Miller. That is a thing that he took ownership of, and that's difficult to do, when when you're using a lot of moving parts that have been there, you know, for a long time, way before you were on the scene.
Like you said, when you take one aspect of the spoken word and you polish it to the point where it is uniquely yours, that's where you kind of you're the one reinventing it. So you will now have a permanent fixture in that that genre. But again, he's so smart that you know, I think that's one of the reasons why he's had so many shows, and he kind of keeps bouncing around the popular culture. When he was doing the Monday Night Football, you can almost hear it in his voice. He's just like, yeah, I don't get why I'm here either.
Yeah.
But yet someone's like, okay, here's a truck full of money. We want you to sit in and it's like on paper it should technically work, but from somebody that really barely doesn't really understand what it is that they're getting into, they're just going to throw them into the situation and assume that it's going to work, you know. But it just, for whatever reason, it just didn't quite do it. But all the shows that he's done, it's like he's waiting for the right moment or the right thing, or the fact that he's just kind of there as a force of nature to be blown from one end of the spectrum to another, because that's pretty much all he really wants to do.
That is one of the other things I really, really love about Dennis Miller, is that he... You hear him talk, especially on his radio show. He would do sort of, he did a lot of long form discussion about, you know, what it was like working at SNL or the behind the scenes of the HBO show, where just people would call up and ask him sort of, you know, questions about what's it like to be in comedy and do you miss going on the road? And he would talk about it. And he had a lot of, you know, just a million great stories. I won't attempt to recreate it. He has one of the best Sinatra stories I've ever heard that involves taking his wife couldn't go, and so he ended up taking his housekeeper to see Sinatra. And, anyway, I think it's on one of his comedy records, but it has to do with Sinatra not being able to understand his housekeeper had some sort of unusual. This sort of long multisyllabic Asian name, and Sinatra couldn't ever get it right. And the upshot of it is that Sinatra just decided her name was Coco, and he just went, "Your name is Coco," and he just wrote it in the book, Coco, best Frank, and that's it. And it's but Miller just tells the story in just this amazing way, but. But you would hear him talk about being in show business, and he had this line about working in comedy, where he described it as being very sort of, you know, that it was just another job, you know, it was like laying bricks, you know, we're driving a truck. And he would say, you know, I come and I make people laugh in exchange for small pieces of paper, which I use to get sustenance for my progeny. That's all I do, you know. And yeah, he was very sort of, because I think he realized he's smart enough to realize how ridiculous show business is and how ludicrous show business is. He was never better than when you would get him talking about his movie roles. People would ask him about, you know, Dennis, tell me about Bordello of Blood. He would talk about being a Bordello of Blood, and he would tell these great stories about being on the set. And I forget who the male the other male lead in that is, because Erica Laniak was the female lead, but it's the other male actor, maybe. But he talked about being on the set with, you know, whoever, and he tells these stories about going. He's like, and then I'm on the set, and I look over, and we're, you know, he's like, we're, you know, we're doing the, you know, we're doing the scene, and, you know, and he, you know, he, between takes, he asks me, you know, if he should modulate, you know, his delivery of a certain line, and goes, and then I realize, like, he actually cares about this job, and like, I'm there on like a pure cash run, like I have no idea, like, why would you care about this? It's doggerel. And he's very, very upfront about the fact that he knows when he takes a gig that a lot of times it's just crap, you know, and he's there because they're paying him, as you said, a truckload of money to do it,
yeah,
and that he has no illusions about being an artist all the time. That sometimes he described himself, by the way, as movies. He described his role in movies as almost always being the best friend to whom the lead character will tell everything, you know, about the plot for the benefit of audience members who were in the genre or came in late. And his job was to hear all of that awkward exposition from the female lead and then to be killed, like in The Net with Sandra Bullock, where he's like, so you're saying the government is after you because you discovered the key to their encryption. That's great. And then dead in a trunk. And like, that was his job in every movie. And he had like no illusions about that whatsoever. His whole thing was like, you know, is that, you know, the comedy was a very mercurial business, and his time was going to be up at some point, and he was going to make it as fast as he could while he could. And he did things that he cared about, but he also did things that just paid really well.
Yeah.
And I like guys who have an honesty about that, you know, because he obviously does put a lot of care into a great, you know, into it. And you would watch his interviews on that HBO show where he would do which was a really brilliantly put together show in its simplicity. Because if you think about it, it was four component pieces on HBO. He would come out, he would do the opening monologue, which segued into the rant, which segued into the guest interview, which segued into the big screen where he did the captions of the photos. On a basic set, just, you know, black with two red chairs and a bottle of water. And it was all just done with lighting cues, but it was such a stark division between each segment, even though they flowed really well together. And it was sort of brilliant in its own way.
Four basic moving parts that, you know, can be any number of different ways to be presented.
And not overreaching. You know, he wasn't a guy that was, he wasn't trying to do the Dennis Miller variety show.
Yeah.
Because I think he figured out at some point, this is what I do. And I don't, you know, and I don't really do much beyond that, because if I reach for it, it's not my deal. It's probably going to fail. So I will work within the area of my own expertise. And he did that exceptionally well. I know I'm kind of dominating this whole thing because I am a big Dennis Miller fan, and maybe that is because, and I think part of it is because as much as people have sometimes. You know, said or just assumed that I must have been, you know, hugely influenced by him, the same way that people sort of think that I must have been hugely influenced by Stern. And I think with Dennis Miller, and I never really listened to Stern, but I think with Dennis Miller, it's probably almost the opposite. I think I gravitated to Dennis Miller because I was such a big, I was such a voracious reader when I was a kid, and I always have been relentlessly talkative and verbose and whatever. And so I think that I always had a vocabulary that was a little bit outsized for whatever age I was, and as my mom will tell you, that I just never shut up. And so I was just talking all the time, using all of these big words that I probably shouldn't have known when I was seven or whatever. And I think it was a little validating to see a guy like Dennis Miller actually making a success doing some, you know, on a totally different level from what I was doing and what I do, obviously.
Yeah.
But a guy who had that same kind of approach, you know, the outsized vocabulary and took 15 words to say what he could have done in three, you know. I think that was kind of inspiring in a way, to see a guy that did comedy that wasn't just saying, isn't that special, or wearing or putting on a dress. You know, it was a kind of comedy that I think in the 80s especially, I didn't see a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't a lot of guys doing that. So,
well, I see it as Dennis. For comedy, a lot of guys will do it for the fame, for the recognition, for the laughter. There's a lot of elements to comedy that it itself becomes its own drug or alcohol. And that overriding element becomes the driving force behind why they want to do it, why they want to push themselves farther and kind of make their stock go up as high as they can. Like you said, I think it's Dennis Miller. He's just really good at doing that. That's not really... People who see his comedy are in love with his sense of humor. He's not in love with the attention or anything like that. He's more into kind of wandering around this earth and devouring more information, having more of a information base to sort of draw from, and pointing out all the shortcomings, all the things that are basically wrong with the world around him, and doing it in a funny way.
Right.
And that's what makes him endearing to the world around him. He doesn't do comedy because he loves doing it. He, like you said, it's just another job for him. We just love the fact that he can do it and do it as well as he does.
I'll wrap this up by saying that I mentioned that I have my own Dennis Miller anecdote, and I got to introduce him actually at Spirit Mountain Casino a couple years back. He was doing two shows there. He was doing like a Friday and a Saturday, and I went out to introduce him on Saturday night, and which is just, you know, weird. And again, I'm not a guy that gets starstruck that easily, just because, A, you know, you work in any kind of any realm of the entertainment business for long enough, and it's just, you know, at a certain point you've done enough interviews that you sort of train that out of yourself. And plus, I've just as we were talking, I think Don and I had this conversation about how over the years I have trained myself to maintain eye contact with, you know, it, you know, just like you interview enough strippers on a morning show, eventually, like, you know, you just learn to not do what Dennis Miller did and just stare at your bosoms. But I don't get Star Trek all that easily. But I have to say it was really weird, because I was waiting to introduce him and he hadn't showed up yet. And I was in not even the green room, but it was like just a little antechamber that leads up to the stage. And so about the size of this studio, maybe not even this big. And then there's a staircase that goes right out onto the stage where the audience is. And I was just waiting there, and I'm pacing back and forth. And then he comes in at one point, and he goes, "Hey, you know, I'm Dennis." And I said, "Oh, I'm Rick. I'm doing the introduction." And he goes, "Okay, I'm just going to sit over here and, you know, I'm just going to do some stuff. You just, you know, they'll let us know." And so he sits down, and he's, I don't even think he actually, I don't think he was actually even reading anything or prepping anything. He went into this like screensaver mode where he kind of sat down and just kind of went into like a, and he just sort of powered down.
Me, sir, I'm just going to power down.
Yeah, exactly. It was like Haley Joel Osment before he gets imprinted. He just sits there and just stares blankly ahead.
He just ate a big mouthful of spinach and shut down.
And I don't know if he was, if he meditates or concentrates or runs through the act in his head, but he was just obviously very calm, very centered. And if anybody's ever seen me backstage before, a listener party or before, like, when I did any of the Bigger Than Jesus stuff, I am totally the opposite. I am a relentless, before I do TV or anything, I pace relentlessly. I always have, and so I just pace back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I'm, like, going over everything in my head, like, over and over and over and over again, and I just do it, just like a madman. So I'm pacing back and forth in this room, and he's just sitting there just like an iceberg, the epitome of calm. And so, like, the millionth time that I walked by him, he just looks at me and goes, "Hey, Rick, are you nervous?" And I said, "Well, I actually am a little bit nervous." And he says, "I'm doing 90 minutes. You're doing 90 seconds. Calm down." And then I just went, "Okay." And I just sat down. And then I just, which was actually sort of great. I mean, I don't know if he was actually thinking I was going to give myself a stroke or if I was just irritating him. Probably the latter. But it was just so great. It was just, and in a way, and he, I know this sounds dorky, but he said it just like Dennis Miller would say that. And it was sort of great. And they were actually late getting the house lights down and getting ready. And he's very, very, very OCD about going on time. Like, if it says 8 p.m., he goes on at 8 p.m. And when it was like 7:58 and they hadn't brought the house lights down yet, and he just goes, at 8 o'clock, he's like, "It says 8, I go on at 8. Like, I got a whole thing. I got to go on whenever the ticket says I'm going on." So he's like, if they don't bring the lights down in like 60 seconds, he's like, "I'm just going to walk out there." And I said, "Well, I can still introduce you." And he's like, "No, he's like, if you go out with the house lights on, you're going to get yelled at." He's like, I'll take the bullet, kid. I'm just gonna walk out if they don't drop the house lights." And he was walking up the stairs, getting ready to walk out on stage. When they started to bring down the house lights. I think, as a matter of fact, I think they saw him. I think the audience saw him, and I think he actually did something of like walking out to the stage and saying like, "I'm Dennis. There's a guy that's gonna come out, and then I'll be back and whatever." But he was, but that was the whole thing. Is like he was like, "No, if you go out there, they're gonna yell at you, and then the manager's gonna gonna be pissed off that you jumped the gun." He's like, "I'll do it." But he was just such a mellow, centered guy. For a guy that seems so frenetic and so manic on stage.
Do you remember what your introduction sounded like?
Yeah, I actually did. I prepared because you're opening for Dennis Miller, and again, yeah. It's not like he's the biggest star in the world, but he's a guy that made a big impact to me and that I liked a lot. So my whole thing is like, wasn't like, can I make Dennis laugh? Because he probably wasn't even listening. But it's like, I don't want to suck. Like, you don't want to choke.
Yeah.
And plus, they give you all these copy points at a place like Spirit Mountain Casino. They load you down with like, I had to give like, don't forget next weekend, Smokey Robinson, and which was one of the things I had to say.
Prime rib is only $10.99 tonight.
Yeah. Delicious slots in town.
I carefully crafted my opening, and I had this joke which is not that funny, but. Part of that is that it's not that funny now. At the time, I think the joke was funnier when I did it because she was a recent phenomenon at that time. And also, I carefully constructed the joke because of the nature of his audience and his recent sort of political shift. I constructed the joke so that it would not appear that I was hewing to any political ideology or party. And they had me do a thing about, like, no flash photo, because he doesn't like to have his picture taken while he's on stage. And it was like, no flash photos, no recording. And I said some joke about the... I said, "By the way, anybody taking flash photos or making audio recordings of this act, you'll have a pair of antlers crudely stapled to your head, and you'll be airdropped into Sarah Palin's backyard." And which, at the because she had just done the thing the previous week of like shooting a moose on television, and that was like the one line summation of her as a person. And so I was actually really, really proud when he actually goes, "That Sarah Palin thing with the moose, it's funny, And I was just like, "I can go home now." There you go. Another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, Mr. Big Jim Willig. You can find out more about him at BigJimWillig.com. When's the first show in your comedy contest?
The comedy contest is Monday the 30th at the Boiler Room, which is downtown Portland. It's like 3rd and Davis. So just keep checking my Facebook. It'll be up there.
Excellent. All right, we're going to wrap things up here in just a skosh, but let's, before we do anything else, welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Our good friend, Mr. Siegfried Zeliger. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey, how's that traffic?
Oh, yes, I just want to kill somebody, that red Datsun this afternoon. Want to kill you.
Here's the thing. I've tried to two or three times over the last week or two, I've tried to get out of here, and it's like, it's a couple of things. A, they're doing construction everywhere. B, it would be, you know, like raining or there'd be a typhoon or something. And then also, they were, I think, at one point filming both Grimm and Gone. Or yes, sec- right. See, within just like a block or two of here.
Yeah, I was over at Lad's Edition yesterday. Yeah.
And so it was just, and so it was like last Friday and rush hour where there was, I think, one tiny little side street open because everything was closed down because of one of those things. And everything was getting funneled down into this one street. It just took me forever and ever and ever. So so let's talk tonight, zombies. So tonight, the Hollywood Theater, double feature of Demons and Night of the Comet, back to back as part of the May of the Dead celebration. And then tomorrow, Zombie Game Day at Guardian Games. Now, I am almost certain that I'm not confusing this with another film, but I might be. Demons. Is Demons the film that actually takes place itself in a movie theater?
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, like, both movies are not totally officially, like, zombie movies, but, I mean, because zombies such great... there's so many variants of for zombies. I mean, you have like the old time like serials of like 1930s kind of movie serials of zombies, and then you have like the Astro Zombies, which were like in the 50s, or I Walked with a Zombie.
Right.
Then it kind of changed, and like Argento kind of mixed with Bava to make this great movie called Demons, and it's kind of it's pretty much a zombie movie, but they're demons. They go into a movie theater, they get trapped, and they just get attacked.
Here's the great thing about this movie, which I saw, Laura and I saw it at the Hollywood, I think, a couple years ago, actually. I think it was like, it was a double feature, it was like Demons and...
Zombie.
Was that the one where the zombie's wrestling a shark?
Exactly.
Yeah, so...
Zombie versus shark.
Which is great. And that was also, by the way, you son of a bitch. Was that the movie where the guy gets the splinter in the eye?
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, man. I hate you.
Your wife was, like, really traumatized.
She was climbing the walls.
Yes.
That's
one of those orifices that I don't care what the circumstances are. You don't go to the eyes.
That is not tonight's film, by the way.
No. So we have Night of the Comet, which is kind of a very poppy 1980s. But it's kind of it's weird. It, like, ends on this, like, really high up note, even though it's the apocalypse. Like, mixes kind of like Omega Man with, I want to say, like, a really watered-down Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
So mixed with zombies, mixed with a little sci-fi. So it's a bizarro movie, but it works really well.
It is. That is Lisa Desjardins' favorite zombie film, by the way. At some point we were working on the book, and she dropped like a Night of the Comet reference, and she's like, I love that film. And she's nuts for that. So if you've never seen Night of the Comet, really, it is fantastic. Demons, if I recall, and I think I've only seen it the one time, it does have a lot of those... in the 80s action films especially had these, a lot of those like hell yeah moments, you know, and it's it's like the moment where like the hero returns and he kicks, it's the moment where you first see Ash, you know, with like the chainsaw, you know, and you see the triumphant reappearance of the hero armed with the weapon or ready to kick ass and do what needs to be done.
Actually, I've never seen any other movie. I mean, this was before kind of Ash, the whole like Evil Dead. I mean, it was like right around the same years, the first Evil Dead, a little bit about Evil Dead 2, but it really has this kind of Ash sort of character towards the end that really kicks ass.
It's fantastic. It really, really is. So that is starting about
9:15 tonight at the Hollywood Theater, and then and it's a double feature. It's so weird that I've talked to so many people, they don't understand the whole double feature route. So that means two movies for one price.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that, well, I guess that's not a thing they really do at most. I guess the double feature with the Death of the Drive-In especially has become a thing that doesn't happen a lot of places.
Yeah, there were a lot of people, I was like, it's a double feature. And they're like, so I have to pay twice? No, you just pay once. And if you come in as a 1980s punk zombie, you get in it for $5.
Fantastic.
Or if you're an IOTC member, you get in for $6. So.
A couple of people asked about the books, so we're going to have we will have some copies of Zombie Economics there for sale, and if you've already purchased a copy, you got an extant copy that you bring in, if you want to have me scribble in it, I will do that as well. So I'll be
and
there.
It's great if you like miss the day of your signing, like me, I was like totally busy on a film shoot and so couldn't go, and so I need you to sign my book too.
I can just sign the giant head, my own giant head that's in the Willamette this week. You were the one that sent me that thing, right? Comparing it to Mr. Burns blotting out the sun over Springfield?
Yes.
Yes.
There it is.
It's all disproportionate. See, that's what I'm saying. It's not even like, it's just off-putting.
That is that, that's her newer head.
Doesn't it?
That's your newer
head. Well, you had like an older head that was very, very fatty.
I had an older bloaty head.
Yeah, it was very bloaty.
It's like a big cube of ham.
It was like a Thanksgiving Day parade head.
Thank you.
Yeah.
At my porn store, we take various pictures from the Woolly Week and the Mercury, and we cut them out. We make two of them, so we make bag tags for when people bring in their bags. So now your head is a bag tag.
That's great.
Porn store. So yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm falsely humble about it. It's all well and good. Hey,
it's like Nancy Reagan's head, huge.
But that's what I'm saying. Doesn't it seem just not too big like for my body as such, because you can't really see it. It's just my head and my shoulders. Doesn't it seem like that's larger, strictly speaking, than it needs to be? I mean,
just on the page.
Yeah, on the page itself.
Yeah.
It was my theory was that they had something else that was supposed to run there, and they lost the art at the last moment. And they just kept clicking Control Plus to just make it big enough to fill the space. So that is going to be nice. So I'll be there tonight, and I'll kind of pop out into the lobby between films and and before and after. So if you have a copy of the book, you want to get signed, or if you want to pick up a copy of the book, we'll have some of those for sale as well.
Or if you just want to see if his head is as huge as you think it might be.
Monstrous head.
We're going to fill his head with jelly beans, and whoever guesses how many jelly beans are in his head, they win the jelly bean. No?
What are you referencing right there?
I just was.
So what do you like? Shake his head.
That's a
and
thing.
Like the jelly belly comes out. Or
I thought
something.
Maybe we're gonna go like in a pinata kind of a direction or something.
No. Referencing a thing there. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
It's been done. I mean, I'm not referencing any one particular giant head. Yours is the most important giant head.
Okay, thank you. Just to clarify really quickly, because
it keeps getting deeper over here.
You said this earlier, but Demons is an Argento film, right?
Yeah, I mean, Argento produced it, but he pretty much directed it, and a lot of people.
It's directed like by Mario Bava's son, isn't
it? Yeah, Lamberto Bava, who did Devilfish, which is absolutely terrible, and he did a couple other movies. Demons 2, after tonight, if you watch Demons 1, do not watch Demons 2, not so great. And there were a whole bunch of Demons 3 through 6, which have nothing to do with demons whatsoever or zombies or anything. They're just the title. That's how crazy the Italians were. But to make a long story short, too late, Argento... amazing filmmaker. If you ever happen to see like Suspiria or Deep Red, Stendhal Syndrome or Opera, which is one of my favorites of Argento, he's a real like a master. And he kind of like a lot of his plots do not make any sense. But that's what works with Demons. Demons actually has, in a weird way, a plot to it, and it actually works. Even though it sounds bizarre, it's a zombie in a movie theater, you would think that's not a really in-depth plot, but it really does work. And compared to like Argento, which was kind of like more style over substance, but it just creepy. If you ever like listen to like the Suspiria score, it's like the most creepiest score ever. It's like like all whiny and stuff.
You know what's weird is I was talking to Cheryl about this, and she said that actually Demons is the only movie that she's walked out on. She wasn't able to finish it, even though she loves Suspiria, and they like her. I think her mom actually showed her Suspiria when she was really young. Her mom had her watch that. Her mom's like way cooler than like any mom should be, and so her mom had her watching a lot of like those classic films like Dementia 13 and whatever. But then she did not. She for whatever reason just couldn't make it through Demons. I'm curious to watch it again tonight because I think I've only seen it the once a couple years ago. So
the one I like another variance of zombie movies I've just recently found or just not found but just kind of ran across. There was a print of part of the Blind Dead series, and they're Blind Dead zombies, which I thought was so cool. They're So what happened was like the Europeans, the Spanish, they made this they like the Knights Templar, kind of like Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, those Knights Templar. And what happened was they get like during the Middle Ages, they get all turned into the dead, and so they get risen. So they're zombies, but they are blind. They can only hear, and so what's really kind of creepy is they come after you just by listening. So they hear for your heartbeat and come towards
you. That is creepy.
That is very creepy.
That's completely unnerving.
Yeah. They're not great movies, but I was like, that's
a great concept, though.
But the concept is like totally kick-ass.
And there's a lot of movies like that where it's like there's just it doesn't all hang together properly. It doesn't quite work, but there'll be like one scene or one conceit or one construct. You know what I was watching actually not too long ago? I don't know why, because it's a terrible film. the 72 version of Tales from the Crypt, with Joan Collins, and it was not unlike the HBO series of later. It was three or four stories from the EC Comics from the 50s that were made into one feature length theatrical release film in 1972. And the movie itself is not very good. It's the most notable thing there is the story that was also used as the pilot for the HBO Tales from the Crypt, which is the maniacal murderous Santa Claus that is led in at the end by the little girl who says, "Mommy, I found Santa," and it's like the guy who's escaped from the loony bin. It was that with Joan Collins, and then there was a couple more, but there's this one sequence where they put it together just so cunningly and craftily, and it's one of those sequences that that just finds like this chink in your mental armor and just jabs you. And it is where there's a guy who runs a home, a sort of
you
know what I'm talking about?
Yes, the Nazi and the dogs and the razor blades.
Yeah, he runs a nursing home.
Nazi zombies?
Runs a nursing home for the blind, but sort of mistreats all the patients very, very badly. And anyway, the long and the short of it is that they devise this revenge tactic, which involves narrowing the corridors of the hospital artificially by bringing in, you know, the walls and covering them with razor blades. So the walls are just lined with those double-edged old-school 1950s razor blades sticking out. And they lure him into the hallway and then release his starving dog, his starving pit bull or whatever from a room at the end of the hall. Thus... And the whole thing is just a setup. This is what a bastard William Gaines and was along with Al Feldstein when they did these comics. The whole comic book story, just like the whole sequence in the film, is just a setup to get to the finale, which is where this guy has the choice between facing his maniacal pit bull, which has been locked up in a room for 3 days and has had no food.
And I think it was a Doberman feature.
I'm going right to pit bull because, you know, I've been brainwashed by the media, so sorry. But he's this maniacal dog that is like some horrible, dog he's trained to attack people. He either has to face the dog, which will almost certainly maul him and kill him, or run down this corridor, which is narrow and lined with razor blades. And then, of course, at the last moment, they turn the lights out. And that's it. And then he chooses the corridor. And so the last thing is him like running down this narrow corridor that is lined with razor blades.
And then they turn the lights out. Yeah.
And that's
wild. It's like Suspiria, where the one woman she goes up in the witch's coven up above in the attic of this ballerina school. Whatever. And so she gets locked in a room, goes over into a window and creeps down into a room full of razor wire, razor wire. So she swims to the circular razor wire, and I'm kind of giving this away, but then at the end she gets to the opening after like swimming through this circular razor wire, and the witch opens the door and slices her head off with a giant axe. It's like so fantastic.
On that note...
But I love those things that are just like, you know, just totally, have like nothing to, like, like Argento, there's this one part, there's this one great movie of Terror at the Opera, which I love, and it's pretty much Phantom of the Opera, except what he hated was there's one of his major problems was like in Demons and Suspiria, people were not looking at the movie. They were just kind of scared, and so they would hide their eyes towards the horrific parts. So in Terror at the Opera, he put his main character. She gets bound, and the Phantom guy murders somebody in front of her. But she put he puts tape under her eyes with pins in it, so she can't close her eyes. It's almost like a Clockwork Orange sort of thing. So she has to like watch the murder happen. And it's totally screwed up. But he just wanted to do that because it was like he wanted to kind of like attack the audience in such a way or say something that, you know, don't look away.
Well, and that's one of those horrible ideas that I think screenwriters or novelists or whoever get in their head. And then they write the entire thing just so they can put that scene in. You know, it's just because they want just that, you know, I got to find a reason to use this whole thing with the safety pins and the eyes. You know, I got to write a movie just so I can do that.
And pretty much Phantom of the Opera, I mean, Terror at the Opera is like, Phantom of the Opera, not much plot. And it's pretty much the eyes, you know, daggers at the eyes and sort of thing. But it's like such a cool touch that it's kind of like the hallway sequence with razors. You're like... It doesn't make any sense, but that is so cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is it. I mean, the entire setup is just for that. All right. On that note, we should draw things to a close. That happens tonight, 9:15, a double feature. And again, if you're one of the young folk who has never experienced that, that is one price, two movies. So how sad that that people didn't know what a double feature was.
Yeah, there were many people. Yeah, that just they were like, what?
That is tonight. You can find out more by going to mayofthedead.com. That is tonight, May 27th, and then tomorrow, May 28th, Zombie Game Day at Guardian Games. So. With that, we will bring to a conclusion another episode of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We want to thank our guests, Big Jim Willig and Mr. Siegfried Zilger. And we'll do a little musical interlude here, and then an encore of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Thank you for listening, and as always, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. It is Friday, May 27th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. See you tonight and again on Monday at noon. Have a good weekend. Bye now.